We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 6 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Liz Brown is off until tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. to start her 2006 Wake Up Call season. Until then, enjoy this best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world and how they affect us. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome. Welcome to Mondays at 9. Our guest this morning is author Thomas Shapiro, author of The Cost of Being Black in America, How Wealth Matters, and What Can Be Done About It. And Thomas Shapiro is joining us from Boston, Massachusetts this morning. Thomas, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning, Liz?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to be on again.
It's wonderful to have you here. I would like to focus on the part of your book, The Cost of Being Black in America and What Can Be Done, How Wealth Matters and What Can Be Done About It. I'd like to first start, before we get to the What Can Be Done About It part, I'd like to kind of give people an overview of the book and your principle about the cost of being black in America.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. In The Hidden Cost of Being African American, I really set out to answer a very important question. And to me, the question is, in a so-called post-civil rights era, where we've made a lot of headway in terms of laws and customs, how can we best explain the persistence of very harmful racial discrimination and racial inequality that seems to go across generations, and it's not stopped with the changing of laws? And the measurement I use in economic terms is to look at families' financial assets.
Mm-hmm.
And what that shows very quickly is that the average African-American family has about a dime in wealth for every dollar of wealth that the average white family has. And there's a huge racial wealth gap in the United States that does not close very much at all as the other important gaps around income and jobs and education close. So that as African-Americans are making some very clear progress when the yardsticks and criteria are merit, like education, jobs, and your paycheck, that doesn't show up very well in terms of a family's financial assets, their wealth. And it's that kind of wealth. We're not talking about millions of dollars here by any stretch of the imagination.
And I think that that's a really important point, that because when we talk about, when we use the word wealth, I think people's minds sometimes can go to that place of hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're not talking about that.
Well, no, we're not talking about that at all. What we're talking about is essentially, does a family have enough financial reserves, enough wealth to be able to think about putting a down payment down on an average price house,
mm-hmm.
or to afford a year of a community college, or to start a small business? And the answer to most of those questions for most people are no.
So when we take that into consideration, and before I say that, I do want to get to some of the attitudinal thing barriers that are out there too that prevents people from seeing these differences in between black folks and white folks. When you wrote your book, The Hidden Cost of Being African American, you talked about the way that white people looked at how they obtained their assets. And that was very revealing.
It was revealing to me. It's probably one of my biggest surprises in doing the nearly 200 interviews that we did to the research to help put this book together. And what you're referring to was that a number of young white families, these are families with young school-aged children, but, you know, 5, 6, 7-year-old kids, and they were struggling with trying to find a house and a community that they wanted to live in and to get their kids in the kind of schools that they wanted to. A number of them were very lucky in that they had parents or grandparents who were able to forward them the down payment money to buy a house, the kind of community that they otherwise couldn't afford just by their income alone. And this is a way that, in my thinking, the historical legacy of race passes itself along from generation to generation. Now, when those young white families had to account for, when they were asked in the interview, how did you acquire these assets? How were you able to live in the community that you are, to afford this kind of house, to send your kids to that high-quality school system, almost invariably their answer is, we earned it or we deserved it.
Mm.
Very little acknowledgement that they were very lucky and had a good portion of those financial assets that allowed them to move up in life passed along, that it's not something they earned. They turn that around in a way by talking about I understand and I hear their voices very loud and very clear here. One couple, for example, in the St. Louis area talked about how they both held two jobs, how they were holding garage sales on weekends, but they still couldn't get enough money together for a down payment on a home where they wanted to live. And finally, the grandmother in the family stepped forward and said something like, this is ridiculous, and wrote a check out for $30,000. They're very lucky, but my point is that there are literally millions of people working just as hard as that family and just as deserving, but do not have parents or grandparents that have the ability to, you know, take the checkbook out and write the kind of check that will afford a home in a community where the people want to live.
And you keep saying the phrase, a home in a community where the people want to live. That's distinct from by being able to buy a house at all, right?
Both of those are involved. Both of those are involved.
Because I mean, they are worrying about and trying to get to a place, a different place than a person of African descent. In many respects, they're trying to simply buy a home as opposed to even being able to buy a home in the neighborhood where they would really want to live.
That's correct. There are a lot more restrictions still operating on where African Americans are feel comfortable in buying homes.
Now,
I know this from my interviews in St. Louis. There's some, the lines are pretty hard.
Oh yes, very much so. And Thomas Kent, have you thought about where does this worldview come from? Where does this view come from that we earn this or that it was some kind of entitlement?
Well, I've been trying to think about it because it's a very important question. I think part of it comes out of a twisting of the American dream. That part of the American dream that essentially says America is the first new nation in the world with supposedly, I know this is going to sound ironic, supposedly without a caste system,
mm-hmm.
Where people can end up where their own achievements and merits take them, that there weren't those barriers in the so-called old European countries that held people back. And that ethos, that psyche, is so profound in the United States, and it's a very progressive notion in a lot of ways, such that people want to attribute whatever station in their life that they have gotten to their own attributes, to their own achievements, to their own merits, and find a lot of psychological difficulty and sometimes political difficulty in a public acknowledgement that they got there not out of their own doing, but because somebody helped them
and
by writing a check or whatever the form of help was. Now, I think that's very profound. As a sociologist, I know that that attitude also has other important functions in the society, because one of the things it says is that if you haven't gotten to the station in life where I have, something must be wrong with you.
And that attitude, that understanding, that worldview, that outlook, is going to make it very difficult to deal with or to address the issue of reparations, because the idea of reparations is completely counter to that false ideology.
Well, I think that you're absolutely correct. That's one of that's one of the strongest barriers to thinking seriously about a strategy around reparations and what that might mean.
Because if white folks have such a challenge of assessing the world, I'm not even talking about going back 50 years, 60 years, 100 years, the world that they live in right now, today, that their grandmother cut them a check for $30,000 for that house. That wasn't something that they worked for. That wasn't something that they earned. That was something that was a gift. If they have a difficulty in seeing that thing that's right in front of them, how much of a challenge is it going to be to see something that's connected to history?
Well, I think it's clearly a great challenge. But let me make a distinction where I think there may be some hope here, and let me see what you think about this. I think it's going to be in the scale of things a little bit easier to have a conversation that attempts to acknowledge the persistent harm that has been caused by past abuses like slavery and Jim Crow and some other forms of institutional discrimination. I think that's going to be an easier conversation than the individual conversation, where I think we can start to talk about history as a memory, where this nation should have one memory about our past and how we've gotten to where we are today. That's a different conversation than somebody living in Boston or Los Angeles or St. Louis or wherever having a great deal of difficulty acknowledging that they got a lot of help personally and individually. I think the historical discussion, because it's not only in the past, but it's also a little bit more detached from the individual. Now, I'm not saying that it's easy, but I think there is a marker of hope there in that individuals may not have to feel that they're being personally attacked for us to come to some kind of reconciliation and understanding about what the history in the United States has been about.
But don't we have to end up at the same place? Don't we have to end up in the place of understanding that a history, something that has happened before us, has led to a certain result in this country? And it seems that when there is an assessment of the history of people of African descent in this country, yes, there is an agreement that by most people that enslavement was wrong. Yes, there is an agreement by most people that enslavement had some history in this country. But tracing the history and the impact of enslavement to the year 2005, there is the same resistance that gets that keeps an individual from acknowledging that $30,000 was a gift and they were lucky to have it, is the same thing that keeps them from saying that what happened 200 years ago has any impact on an individual here in the year 2005.
Well, I think in the short term you might be right. My sense of what a serious conversation around reparations is that the conversation is going to take a long time. And it's going to, if we get there, I think it's going to involve the equivalent of a National Truth and Reconciliation Commission that's going to have a lot of testimony, a lot of historical experts, people that have looked at how other societies have dealt with issues of reparations and the way they think about their past and its relationship to the present, such that over a period of time, that society will become more engulfed in that conversation. And I think that as some of those, what I think you and I would agree would be some of those truths will surface, as those truths surface, that then it becomes a little less of an individual problem, but looking at that history as an act of collusion in the whole society and thinking about ways then, well, how do we address and then redress that persistent harm? Now, maybe I'm being naive about that, but I do have an optimism. I do have a hope that as a part of that discussion, the individual family conversations will be a little easier.
So you believe you're proposing, or it would make sense to you to do what was done in Africa, to do what was done in South Africa, specifically the truth and reconciliation component.
I think that's the first step. I think that I've been trying to think about this a lot because when I do a lot of traveling and a lot of speaking around the country to a lot of groups. I've sort of been blessed with the opportunity that the reception of The Hidden Cost of Being African American has gotten, and in every audience, and I'm not kidding here, every audience, the question of reparations come up, and there have been some great discussions, and my thinking has been evolving as I think a lot of people's thinking about this has been evolving.
Because before, when you started this book, what was your position on reparations?
My position on reparations was that I said politically it's a non-starter. Politically, it's a place I don't want to go because it really creates an axis that I didn't think I wanted to mistake a political outcome on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the case anymore because my sense is that the first important requisite of a reparations discussion is the sort of the equivalent of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where we do have a conversation about the historical memory of the country, where we come to terms a bit with what the narrative around slavery and Jim Crow and institutional discrimination is about,
and the impact of that,
absolutely,
mm-hmm.
The impact of that is the most important part in some ways. You have to tie the past to the present. You have to come up with the equivalent, if you will, of the smoking gun of discrimination. And the smoking gun of discrimination is a causal chain that links past practices and policies to present outcomes of inequality. And I'm convinced that those chains are there and that there's a way of framing those and talking about those so that the general public can understand them. Now, whether they can agree with them or not is obviously a political issue.
And we have to take a break. I am talking to author Thomas Shapiro, an author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American, and he is joining us here on Mondays at 9. I see your calls. We'll get to some of them when we get back. I'm Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9, a component of The Wake Up Call. Our toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. My email address is lizbrown, LIZZBROWN, at sbcglobal.net. Get to me. I'll be back.
There's no one above you. I want you. You're listening to the best of The Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Liz Brown will be back live in the studio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, we'll bring you more of the best of The Wake Up Call. Thirty minutes after the hour, 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Mortimer with this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Novartis. Eastbound 40 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for no problems to report there. Westbound 40 at the 5570 split. Looks good. Westbound 64 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Everything is on the move. Northbound Route 3's ramp onto the Poplar Street Bridge. No problems to report there. Eastbound 70 from Sunbelt all the way to the Blanchett Bridge. Looks good. Eastbound 70 at 79. Look for slow traffic out in that area. Northbound 55 from 44 all the way into Big Bend looks good as well. Eastbound Route 30, there's road construction that's reduced to one lane. Illinois 158 at 64, look for bridge maintenance operations. They will have some lane closures going on as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Carry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Carry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion is trusted therapy that deeply conditions and nourishes elbows, knees, and everywhere else. Skin thirst for moisture, leaving your skin feeling healthy and smooth. Try Carry today. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday. For today, a tornado watch is in effect until 8 a.m. That means conditions are right for the formation of funnels and or tornadoes. Otherwise, breezy, mostly cloudy, chance of showers, high in the mid-50s. This evening, colder, mostly cloudy, low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, partly sunny with a high in the upper 40s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the upper 30s. And on Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain, high in the upper 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 55 degrees and rain. Lambert Field is reporting 57 and rain as well. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown will be back in the studio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. to start the 2006 series of the wake-up calls. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Hi, it's Kevin.
And Sue McCarthy.
Of the Travel Planner Show.
Before you head out for a trip, you want to know how to pack, so check weather at yahoo.com, and then you'll know what to wear when you get there.
Oh, she's so good. The Travel Planner Show, every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4 here on AM 920 WGNU.
Learn to draw holiday cartoons like a pro. Enroll your child in the special art class at the Greensfelder Recreation Complex in Queenie Park. Children ages 6 to 12 learn facial expressions, sounds, and motion with original cartoon characters and more. Classes begin on Saturday, January 7th from 9 to 10:30 a.m. for a cost of $30. For more information, call Tanya at 636-391-0922, extension 12. News to you from WGNU.
Once upon a time, in a small cottage, lived a boy named Chuck. One day, Chuck heard a knock from inside the wall.
Who is it?
He cried, for Chuck cried rather easily.
It is I, the energy hog, over here,
said a voice. Now, an energy hog is what you have when people waste energy. Chuck ran to tell his family.
There's a hog in our house,
exclaimed Chuck.
That's no way to talk about your Aunt Melba,
said his mother, and sent him to his room.
That does it,
said Chuck. He raced to his computer and logged onto energyhog.org.
I'll just have to get rid of it myself.
At energyhog.org, Chuck played cool games and learned to use energy wisely. He learned that by switching to better light bulbs, he had the power to rid the cottage of the evil energy hog forever.
I'm leaving, but I shall return,
vowed the hog.
Don't count on it, bacon breath,
vowed Chuck. And the moral of the story is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org, or a switch in time, save swine.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Radio Free St. Louis is AM 920, WGNU. Catch us on the World Wide Web at WGNU.net.
Liz Brown is off today. She will be live in the studio beginning at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, so tune in for live programming with the Wake Up Call. Until then, we have more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to author Thomas Shapiro, author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American. We're talking about the issue of reparations this morning. Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you.
Let me get to a caller or two here. Ex-Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Liz, and your guest. You know, I heard him mention the issue of reparation, which, by the way, I'm also supportive of for many reasons. But it looked like the idea and the sentiment of not only the populace here in the United States, the Caucasian populace, but also even the justice system. And I give reference to just a recent court decision in the Supreme Court where they refused to hear the plea of the descendants and the victims of the Tulsa race riot in 1921. Now, all the time we have always heard the excuse that, well, no one today is living that experienced slavery. But these people did experience this, and they're the remembrance of this. But even when you try to get justice in the court, like we have seen the same type of justice that has been handed down to other ethnic groups which have experienced similar atrocities, people of African descent are completely ignored. So how are we ever going to overcome this type of sentiment that seems to exist here in the United States?
Thanks, Peter. Thomas.
Peter, that's a great... I think there are a couple of great questions in there. I think the discussion this morning, in many ways, really is trying to focus on the reception in the United States of a conversation about reparations and how can we think about making that reception more favorable so that we can have a serious conversation about it. And I think that strategically, in terms of planning, that a very important consideration is to talk about the historical aspect first, to talk about the historical memory in the United States for a number of reasons. It's really important to remind people of the absolutely essential, valuable contribution of people of African descent and people of other descents as well. But it's the contribution of the people of African descent that has been delegitimized, in my humble opinion, over the course of decades now. And that's part of what a serious discussion about reparations does. Another thing it does, I think, is, and it's something I've struggled with, and Liz, I'd love to hear your viewpoint on this. I used to be concerned that a discussion about reparations only dealt with history, that only dealt with slavery, as Peter referred to. And I'm concerned about that because my own work shows that the thread of the history of race in the United States, which to my way of thinking is very much part of the historical amnesia, race in the United States is ground zero at America's shortcomings in our experiment with democracy, and that's why it's so important. But we tend to make in our minds a break between the past and the present. My research shows, and I'm absolutely convinced of this, that in cities like St. Louis, Boston, Los Angeles, places I've done my research, and in every other city, that if you buy a home, for example, in a community that's largely white, versus compared to buying a home in a community that's 40% non-white, for example, that your wealth in terms of the home equity, how fast your home appreciates in value, and that creates wealth, that wealth creation is a lot greater in the white community than it is in the non-white community, and much greater than it is in a community that's largely African-American. So the processes we're talking about, the dynamics of race and the way they're deeply institutionally embedded in the society is not just something from slavery. It's part of the legacy, I believe, that has come to us from slavery and the way we've dealt with race in the United States. So, in my way of thinking, a discussion about reparations includes the past, all the way back to slavery, through Jim Crow, and continues up to an acknowledgement of the harm of present institutional arrangements.
Well, I don't know how we can... in that I hear kind of like a breaking of the chain, because I guess enslavement is the original sin, and all actions after that are all fruits of that poisonous tree. So if we're going to have a discussion, if we're going to have this truth and reconciliation component to this, doesn't it have to go back to the original sin? And what is the reason why you have a community where there, wherever there are a number of people of African descent, that value goes down? Well, that comes from the understanding and the values that were established that allowed people to say that they were justified to drag people of African descent from their countries and put them as free laborers in this country, because there is a lesser value of these people. That comes from the original enslavement ideology. How is there a break in that chain?
Well, I'm not sure we're saying things that are a whole lot different here, because I think it is important. I think that the whole chain, as our metaphor has been developed here, mm-hmm. our whole chain of the history of people of African descent in the United States needs to be a part of this discussion of mm-hmm. reparation.
So let me get to another caller here. Marty, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Liz. I'm enjoying your show as always.
Thank you, and you're here with Thomas Shapiro.
Yes.
Morning, Marty.
How you doing? I'd like to make a couple of comments. One, the longer they let this thing about reparations drag out, it seems like the longer people's memories, like you were saying, memories tend to lapse and they want to forget. And two, if they did bring up reparations, wouldn't it also be bringing up things that have been done to the Native Americans and stuff? Wouldn't they be worrying about the Native Americans coming up and asking for reparations? And three, I think that when you start looking at reparations and bringing people's wealth up to let's say a person or a race that has or been ruling the country, how do you think that people would actually bring somebody else up to their speed and make them equals when it benefits them more to keep them at a certain level, and not make them equals and keeping them down with certain things, like having a house that, let's say, on the north side, and no matter what you do to it, the cost of that house does not go up. And then if you come to the south side, the house, if you fix it up, and you might not do no more to it than what you would do on the north side, the house is all of a sudden worth $250,000.
Thank you for your questions, Mark.
Welcome.
Thomas.
Sure. You've got great listeners and people with great questions. And as a professor, I'd love to have them in my class. Let me take up two parts of Marty's discussion. One is his idea about forgetting. The longer we go without having a reparations discussion, the easier it becomes for that historical memory to fade, or for people to write their own narrative that isn't true to the history. And I think, unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of that today. That's why exactly why I think it's so important to have a conversation about what is our historical memory of race in the United mm-hmm. States. What was slavery about? What were some of the causes? Who were the people that benefited? Who were the people that perpetrated it?
And how people benefited.
And how people benefited.
Because isn't there, like, one of the thoughts out there is that, well, you know, my great-great-grandparents didn't own a slave. First of all, you know, there is no www.slaveowner.com. You know, most people really don't know.
There's no registry.
Absolutely, absolutely. But that aside, people benefited from enslavement without ever owning a slave.
Absolutely, absolutely. The wealth of the society, the gigantic, rapid economic development of the society was based on slave labor.
That's right.
I think historians would agree that there's very little doubt about that. I would like to talk for a minute about his, Marty's comment about who is included and who would be excluded in a reparations discussion.
Well, can we take a break, please?
Sure.
And then when we come back, I would love to get to that. I'm talking to Thomas Shapiro. He is the author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American. He's also the Proko's Chair of Law and Social Policy at the School of Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University. My name is Liz Brown. This is Mondays at 9. We will take a break, but we will be back right after that. Stay with us.
I don't care what others say.
You're listening to the Best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown will be back live in the studio on Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. Until then, we'll be right back following these messages.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline, Washington. The Pentagon ordered hundreds of American military personnel who came home on leave for the holidays to give interviews to their hometown papers and other local media outlets, but to give a positive spin on the American war effort. This program is called Operation Homefront, and the Pentagon seems satisfied with the results thus far. The military is under tremendous pressure to sell the war to the people at home. One reservist said he was promised an early release if he did a good job promoting the conflict. Conversely, the Army is also coming down heavy-handed against soldiers who go on record with opposition. One National Guardsman was demoted and fined over $1,000 after he posted anti-war statements on an internet blog. And Dateline London. High natural gas prices are not only affecting the United States. Great Britain is now struggling with increasing costs as well, largely due to a dispute between the Ukraine and Russia that has left a gas pricing arrangement up in the air. This situation is threatening the supplies of natural gas for the entire European Union. About 80% of natural gas exports from Russia pass through Ukrainian pipelines. Russia has a political problem with the Ukraine because it wants to join NATO and become closer to the European Union. Russian President Putin wants to fix prices at the current level until April and then raise them by 400%. The Russian gas monopoly, called Gazprom, is threatening to cut off all gas deliveries to Ukraine if no deal is reached. Last week, Ukraine's prime minister threatened to simply take 15% of the Russian gas that comes through its pipelines if Russia slashes its delivery. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. And stay tuned for today's solutions with David Lenihan from 4 to 6.
The past several years, you've heard WGNU's community calendar of events going on in and around the area. Ever wonder where the information comes from? The majority of it comes from our listening audience. If your nonprofit organization would like help promoting its events and ongoing operations free of charge, send all necessary information to calendar@wgnu.net. Please send the correspondence 2 weeks prior to any events. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject submissions for reasons of time and content.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Take on the day and take on Dr. Laura Schlesinger on the internet at WGNU.net.
This is Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown, where we take a closer look at issues and people shaping our world. Once again, here's Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Mondays at 9. This morning we are talking to Dr. Thomas Shapiro. He is the author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American. We're talking about the issue of reparations. And Thomas, we were talking about the question that was raised by Marty.
Right. Let me make three quick points here, if I can. One, I want to talk just for a minute about who's included and who's excluded in this discussion. In Brazil, for example, if we want to think a little comparatively and internationally about discussions of reparations, the discussion in Brazil about reparations includes indigenous peoples as well as the slaves that were left in what is now Brazil. We may want to think about how to include Native Americans in this discussion as well. It would be it would change the conversation slightly, because the redressing of that particular historical harm may have to be thought of a little differently. But I would suggest that we would want to make that inclusion.
But Marty also raised the concern about the resistance to the idea of reparations would be fueled by the fact that, well, if this country gives reparations to people of African descent, then this will open the doors to having to give reparations to other people, indigenous people included. And that's a legitimate concern.
Yes, it is. That's partially why one strategy that's evolving here is one that we could call progressive realization, where we have the truth and reconciliation part first.
Mm-hmm.
That's divorced from how do we address it. That's divorced from money, if you will. And I think that tends to be that discussion would draw in a lot of people. What comes out of that discussion is okay. If the society or enough people in the society arrives at a point where we clearly understand that our historical memory is one where these grievous practices in the past have present application in terms of structuring racial inequality, then the question is, what do we do about it? Now, I've become much more taken by the relatively recent bent in the reparations discussion around this that is moved from talking about individual reparations to building community assets. And I would say something like this. I think in a country as wealthy as the United States that we might want to think about rectifying the continuing inferior investment in things like schools, housing, medical care, and community service that continues to plague the African-American population, and we could add if we wanted to continue the discussion, and continues to plague the Native American population. Those would be met somewhat differently, obviously, given the urban-rural component and the reservation system. But I think that as we translate the discussion from individual reparation, which again takes it a little off of the, you know, was your father, grandfather, grandparent a slave owner, and are you the descendants of slaves, to looking at how communities fare in the United States and rectifying the continuing inferior investment in some communities as opposed to others.
But that does not get to the other piece of even that your book, The Hidden Cost of Being African American, deals with, and that's ownership of assets.
I think ownership and control of assets are critical here, and they're critically important. I think it's important, as many people in the white community do who are relatively well off, that ownership and control of services, businesses, homes, financial institutions in the African American community among people who live there is also critically important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that base that I think a reparations discussion can start to talk to and help build.
So when you
from there,
mm-hmm.
We can talk about other policies that would help to build individual and family assets.
So when you say control, how do you view that? How do you view, say, in North St. Louis where I live, how do you view that? How would that look like?
Well, it may look like helping to build, helping to finance financial institutions.
A bank, if you will.
Banks or series of banks, mm-hmm. or credit associations, revolving credit associations in particular, where the financial capital that does exist in the community of North St. Louis would have a better chance of staying in and circulating in that community, and hence providing investment for banks to give mortgages, for people who want to continue to stabilize that community and buy homes there, for families that might want to start small businesses or to build their businesses, and for other kinds of loan purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It would be an effort that would attempt to keep more of the financial wealth within that community instead of being pulled out of that community and being invested elsewhere.
And in your vision of that, who would control those banks?
Well, that we're going to need to work out. I don't have all the answers here.
because that brings back the concern and the same possibility of this, the patterns that have existed in this country.
Yes, it does. But I think if they are a smaller community credit based organizations, where the board of directors is drawn from the community, and there are other controls that are built in, I think there's more of a possibility. I can't talk about eventualities, mm-hmm. but there's much more of a possibility that the ownership and control of those financial resources will help to benefit the community it's located in a lot better. We see these in a lot of areas, a lot of urban centers in the United States, community development corporations that help to do this, but they're doing it on a relatively small scale. And I think we need to think about how we can ramp up here, how we can go to scale, mm-hmm. for much larger communities.
Do you see this, a discussion, even a nationwide discussion, a truth and reconciliation event happening in this country in your lifetime, in my lifetime? Do you see it? Do you really see it, Thomas?
Not in the next few years, no. I think there's a lot of work that has to be done before this kind of idea, this kind of panel, this kind of national commission could even be established. Under the present political climate, I think you and I and a lot of the listeners here would share a great deal of pessimism about it, and rightly so. But I also have become aware and convinced that the more we have these kinds of discussions, I see that we're gaining ground. It's happening slowly. I also think, and you know, I think of the way my own thinking has evolved, and I bet your thinking has changed and evolved a bit too, as you hear some ideas that sound a little better than one we might have had 2 years ago. That we become sharper, and I think that the ideas have much more possibility of sort of permeating other parts of the society.
And
it's a long-range project.
Have you had an opportunity to meet and to talk with Senator John Conyers?
No, I've not. I would love the opportunity someday to be able to have a discussion with Congressman Conyers.
Because
I know that in the past,
mm-hmm.
he has sponsored reparations legislation
every year been there.
And the reason he does that is not because he knows there's not a chance in hell that it's going to be victorious, but he wants to put it on the table.
And his legislation is not for reparations monetarily, it's for a discussion,
yes.
about reparations.
Yes. Yes.
And that's why I ask in terms of how long you think this is going to take, because it is very hard in this country.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be more than John Conyers. He's been a great leader here in this discussion, and he's been very courageous. I think it's time for more of us to take up the call that he's been leading.
Dr. Thomas M. Shapiro, author of The Hidden Cost of Being African American, thank you so much for joining us on Mondays at 9.
Thank you for having me this morning. It really has been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Take care.
Same to you.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, I will be back same time, same place tomorrow.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake-Up Call. Liz Brown will be live in the studio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, we'll have more programming right here on AM 920 WGNU.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Michael Barr. It has been an exhausting several days for firefighters in Texas and Oklahoma. They're fighting wildfires fueled by dry and windy conditions. Two small towns in the northern part of Texas have been destroyed. ABC's Lauren Rogers has more on the fires in Oklahoma.
From the air, the northeast part of Oklahoma City looks like a charcoal pit. Smoke and flames are visible across the city where wildfires are burning. New fires that broke out Sunday are being fueled by the unseasonably dry conditions and strong winds gusting 50 miles per hour.
Wildfires have also cropped up in New Mexico. Heavy rain continues to soak northern California. ABC's Alex Stone is in Sonoma County.
The floodwaters are beginning to recede a bit, but it still takes a boat to get into towns like Guerneville. Search and rescue crews are moving through flooded neighborhoods. This woman evacuated.
I was just worried about the 2 days of rain, about the basically mudslides. I was worried. So I thought we might be okay, but they can't rescue us because it's better to be safe than sorry.
Still, the river is sitting 8 feet above flood level. People who refuse to evacuate have been told to shelter in place and wait for the water to recede. Alex Stone, ABC News, Sonoma County, California.
For the first time in 51 years, rain is expected to fall on the Tournament of Roses parade in Pasadena. This parade goer camped out last night to get a good spot.
We've been trying to stay under the tarp, stay out of the rain as best we can.
Former Ohio State running back Maurice Claret is wanted by Columbus police for a New Year's Day robbery. The regular NFL season is over. Pittsburgh, Carolina, Washington, and Tampa Bay wrapped up the final NFL playoff spots yesterday. How about a bit of history from New England backup quarterback Doug Flutie? Kevin Harlan on CBS with the call.
Drop kick for the extra point is up and in. Can you believe that?
The last time that happened, a drop kick for an extra point in the NFL, the players were wearing leather helmets. This is ABC News.
Walmart and Sam's Club have teamed up with Humana to provide you with all the information you need about the new Medicare prescription drug benefit. Enroll today. Log on to walmart.com/Medicare or talk with your Walmart pharmacist or Humana sales representative. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies accept all Medicare prescription drug benefit plans. Medicare-approved HMO, PPO, and PFFS plans available to anyone enrolled in Part B and entitled to Part A of Medicare through age or disability. Copayment, service area, and benefit limitations may apply.
Want to get to the next level of your career? Earn a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix. It's education designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn your degree in 2 to 3 years. At over 170 campuses, they offer programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix at 1-800-853-4433. Offer not valid in Tennessee or Nevada. Programs vary by campus. 1-800-853-4433.
Maryland authorities say a gunman burst into a Sunday evening service at a church and robbed members of the congregation. No one was injured, and the thief is still on the loose. Europe and the U.S. are expressing concern over Moscow's decision to cut off gas to Ukraine. It comes as Moscow is accusing Kiev of grabbing Europe's gas in the dead of winter. ABC's Linda Alban has more from the Foreign Desk.
The politics of energy has sent a shiver across the European community. The effects of Russia's decision to turn off the gas tap to Ukraine has resulted in a drop in supplies destined for Europe, with Austria, Poland, and Hungary already feeling the effects. Russia, whose main export pipeline runs through Ukraine, has accused Kiev of siphoning off exports destined for Europe. But Ukraine says it's entitled to a percentage of what's in the pipeline in return for transporting the gas across its borders. The crisis was triggered by Ukraine's refusal to agree to an immediate five-fold hike in the price of gas. Linda Alban, ABC News, London.
Michael Barr, ABC News.
Time for another WGNU News update. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. This report is brought to you by Charter Communications Health Fair. In the news this hour, about 40 families will have to find new homes while others are awaiting the go-ahead to return to their apartments after a weekend fire. The cause of Saturday's fire at a senior apartment complex in the 1400 block of Ohio is still under investigation. Officials say about one-third of the Lafayette affordable housing complex was destroyed. And a chain reaction crash early Saturday morning claimed the life of a Kirkwood woman. Police say 41-year-old Viveka Neely was standing behind her car in the left lane on westbound Highway 40 near Jefferson when she was struck and killed. A third car then struck both other vehicles. One of the other drivers was treated for minor injuries. The St. Louis City Board of Election Commissioners is throwing out a recall petition due to fraud. Commission Chairman Ed Martin says the petition to recall 22nd Ward Alderman Jeffrey Boyd was thrown out because at least half of the 3,400 signatures collected were found to be fraudulent.
We found some dead people on the petitions. We had to strike those. But we also found other incidents that we think are fraudulent. We had duplicate signatures. We had what we think are some forgeries. We had a number of problems with signatures and with signature petitions, the pages, and those who collected them.
Martin says he doesn't know who's responsible for the fraud, but that person could face jail time. The board will investigate the matter over the next month and turn over the information to city and federal authorities. Finally, St. Louis Rams radio broadcaster Jack Snow remains hospitalized in critical condition with a staph infection. Dr. Gregory Storch, the chief of infectious diseases at St. Louis Children's Hospital, says staph is a common bacteria often found in the nose, but it can spread into the bloodstream and can become fatal. Former St. Louis County Executive Buzz Westfall died of a staph infection in October of 2003. Snow became ill in late November and had been recovering, but took a turn for the worse last week. That's a report of WGNU News, brought to you by Charter Communications Health Fair. Bring your family to America's Center this weekend for the second annual Get Hooked on Health Expo, presented by Charter Communications. Visit GetHookedOnHealth.com for a schedule of events. It's free, so make the expo part of your 06 New Year's resolution. That's a report of WGNU News, and I'm Peyton Colston reporting.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Kerry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Eastbound 70 at Adelaide, that accident has been cleared. All roadways are now open. Westbound 70 at Hanley, look for a disabled vehicle on the shoulder. Northbound 55 between 270 and Holly Hills, no problems reported there. Eastbound 44 from Merrimack River Bridge all the way into Shrewsbury is lighter than normal. Eastbound 40 between Bloomsbridge, Clarkson, and Morrison, look for no problem, or Clayton, Morrison, look for no problems report there. Northbound 270 between 55 and Manchester, everything's on the move. Westbound 5570 at Tudor and the Poplar Street Bridge looks good. Westbound 64 at the Bow Avenue all the way into Poplar Street Bridge. Traffic is lighter than normal. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Kerry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Kerry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion is trusted therapy that deeply conditions and nourishes elbows, knees, and everywhere else. Skin thirsts for moisture, leaving your skin feeling healthy and smooth. Try Kerry today. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday for today. A tornado watch is in effect until 8 a.m. Otherwise, breezy, mostly cloudy, chance of showers high in the mid-50s. This evening, look forward to mostly cloudy skies, colder with a low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, partly sunny skies, high in the upper 40s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy until early evening, then becoming mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. Then on Wednesday, look forward to mostly cloudy skies, a chance of rain, the high in the upper 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 54 degrees under cloudy conditions with rain. Lambert Field is reporting 56. Stay tuned for more of the Best of the Wake Up Call right here. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, enjoy another installment of the Best of the Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Aw, are you thirsty?
If you're a cat owner, you should know subtle behavioral changes can sometimes be early signs of illness.
Wow, you really need a brushing.
Increased thirst, decreased grooming, and many other changes can be harder to detect in cats. And cat owners may not notice a change until the disease is advanced.
You don't seem yourself lately.
That's why every cat should receive a wellness exam twice a year. Wellness exams can help your veterinarian detect, treat, or ideally prevent health problems before they become serious.
I think it's time you had a checkup.
Call your veterinarian and schedule your cat's wellness exam today. Or visit avma.org for more information. A message from the American Veterinary Medical Association and your local veterinarians.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I think I'm hearing...
Liz Brown is out today. She will be back live in the studio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. for a 2006 live installment of The Wake Up Call. Until then, enjoy more of the Best of The Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number, 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. Any, every, all. Get up. Get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is the phone number. Huh. We have, we're always talking about something on the wake-up call. We're always talking about the connection with what happens in this country and what happens in the rest of the world. Earlier this morning, we were talking about the outrageous, outrageous statement by a cleric in this country by the name of Pat Robertson, calling for the assassination of the president of Venezuela, the democratically elected president of Venezuela, a cleric calling for our government to assassinate a democratically elected president of another country. And one of the components of that that we have not discussed is the component that Venezuela... We give a lot of our oil from Venezuela. And Hugo Chavez, President Chavez, does not have to sell it to us. He can sell it to China. And he's already sat down with China and is working out the deal for that. He doesn't have to sell us anything. And very few, no one from the White House is saying that. Statements like that put the entire nation at danger. Instead, we're hearing from this administration that statements from Cindy Sheehan put the nation in danger. But a statement from a cleric to kill, the assassinate, to murder the president, the democratically elected president of another country, doesn't put us at risk. Well, it does. Yes, it does. It puts us in risk in ways that we don't have enough hours on this show, despite the fact that it's 4 hours every day for 5 days a week. We don't have enough hours every week to talk about the danger that it puts this country in. The nation is silent. The administration is silent when it comes to advocating when it comes to committing, when it comes to articulating harm to a nation of people that look like brown people. This nation, this administration, this government is silent on that. And it is up to us to raise the issues and to articulate the true crimes that are being committed in the name, in our names. It should come as no surprise that no one in this nation is in this government is concerned about what's going on in Niger. That the tsunami made for great PR for Bill Clinton to sit next to George Bush and act like they were trying to bring health and comfort to the folks during the tsunami, but the reality is that we haven't. And we're not. We need to talk honestly about what we say we do and what we actually do. One of the issues that has passed underneath the radar of a media that is obsessed with a missing blonde, blue-eyed child in Aruba. A nation that is the media that is not obsessed with the crimes that are going on in a country that's a bit closer than Aruba. Haiti. And we're going to talk about what the billion-dollar media industry is not talking about. Haiti. And we're going to do that this morning with investigative journalist and writer Anthony Fenton. Anthony, good morning and welcome to the wake-up call.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. How are you doing?
Very good. I'm outstanding. And you're up there in Vancouver.
Yes.
All right. Well, Anthony, let's talk about Haiti because this is your thing. This is what you do. We don't hear a lot about Haiti in our billion-dollar media. In fact, I think I dare say that there aren't any of the billion-dollar media's correspondents even located in Haiti to talk about what's going on. Right now, at this moment, as we speak, what is going on in Haiti?
Well, what is going on in Haiti right now is very much what's been going on since February 29th of 2004, when the United States, and Canada, and France effectively overthrew democracy there, like they tried to do in Venezuela.
How'd that work out?
through the means of a coup d'état, mm-hmm. with the same way they've been doing throughout the hemisphere for so many decades. Chile in 1973, maybe it began with a little further back in 1953 with the coup d'etat and the method of destabilizing democratically elected governments. They focused on Arbenz in Guatemala back in 1953. And really what, you know, this traces
Patrice Lumumba,
mm-hmm. Yeah. This traces back in our hemisphere here to the Monroe Doctrine, mm. but even further than that, it traces back to the independence of Haiti as the first true republic.
And who they beat to get there?
Yeah, three colonial powers,
mm-hmm.
And they've ever since then been punished severely for that act. And this coup d'état in 2004. One of the most heinous acts carried out by the United States, as you said, under the radar of the media, because they did such a good job at demonizing Aristide. They did such a good job at, and Aristide was the democratically elected president. They did a very good job at, strangling them economically and making it appear as though all this was Aristide's fault. They did a good job, as they always have, like in Nicaragua in the 1980s and early 1990s, built a political opposition that made it appear as though there was popular opposition to Aristide, even though weeks before he was overthrown, a million people took to the streets in support of his constitutional mandate. That didn't matter because the corporate media just didn't cover that story. They covered the 10,000 people, calling for his overthrow, but they didn't cover the million people taking to the streets in support of him. And that's sort of the crazy dichotomy we see carried out by the mainstream media. And today on the ground in Haiti, you have this Haitian police force that is made up of mostly former military. This is a military that Aristide disbanded over 10 years ago.
Because he had to.
Yeah.
Otherwise he would be funding and supporting a military that whose design was to get rid of him.
Yeah, precisely, because they did in 1991.
Yeah.
They did conspire to get rid of him. And they killed 3,000 to 5,000 people, and that's what's happened again. We've seen a repetition of the human rights abuses of the period when Aristide was overthrown the first time in a CIA-backed coup. And just recently, there have been police passing out machetes to civilian attachés who've been hacking people to death in the neighborhoods that just won't let go of their calls for the return of Aristide. There have been massive demonstrations ever since he left, and every time the people try to demonstrate, the police will either shoot into the crowds, or most recently they will go with the United Nations, or the United Nations will go on their own into these bastions of support and just start killing civilians, others,
and
children.
And the scary part about, scary is not the right word, the word doesn't come to my head or heart of how awful this is, but we have reports of after the UN has been to places where people that support Aristide are located, people dying with single bullet shots to their heads.
Yeah, headshots targeting children, headshots targeting women, and targeting sandal makers. And there is video footage of this now that is circulating of the aftermath of the July 6th UN-led massacre. The UN forces are being led by Brazil, but there are over 40 different countries involved in the military occupation of Haiti today. It was the Jordanian troops who carried out this massacre primarily, from what we know. And they come from an anti-democratic country, a country where, I'm from Canada, where there are Canadian police there training Iraqi police in Jordan to go back and repress their own people under the boot of another military occupation. And you are also talking about Venezuela. I was just there for the World Festival of Youth and Students, and
I heard it was just marvelous.
Yeah, it was. It was incredible. And I should mention about Aristide and Chavez. Chavez, at actually the World Social Forum, he said that Jean-Bertrand Aristide is the legitimate president, kidnapped by the U.S. in the same way that Chavez was in the April 2002 coup in Venezuela. He mentioned that any solution to the crisis in Haiti will have to incorporate Aristide, and that the solution could not be in the hands of the United Nations or any group of presidents. So Chavez knows intimately what happened to Aristide. And Chavez, in fact, like you said, he himself said we don't have to send oil to the United States. And he said the only option for the United States now is to assassinate me.
Mm-hmm.
And very prophetic, right?
True fact. And I think that a lot of people are not tying together that prior to the outrageous statement by the cleric Pat Robertson were the outrageous statements by Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld just days before.
Yeah.
When they were
out
there ratcheting it up and talking about calling him a terrorist, and they were beating the drums for this articulated demand from a cleric.
Yeah, Rumsfeld was visiting Paraguay through the allies in the area trying to shore up support, because they fear, they're really trying to play up this Castro-Chavez relationship, and it is a friendship, and they are working together openly, as well they should, and the revolution in Venezuela, this is the United States, this is them at their finest hour, right, in this region. This is what they do best. Destabilize governments and overthrow them, and if they have to, kill the leaders. And that's what would have happened to Aristide if he'd been able to resist it. In fact, in this case, it served the United States' interests more so to have him in exile in South Africa with a muzzle on than it did to kill him. And that's why he's alive today, probably.
And there are a couple of things that I want to talk to you about, Anthony, because being an American and being, we have two other nations that border us, Mexico and Canada, and the education that I have gotten either through books or just through assimilation about Canada is Canada is a whole lot better in a lot of respects than the United States is. But Canada played a role in what happened to Aristide. And there's a history of Canada and dirty hands in Haiti.
Yeah, there's a history of Canadian dirty hands, period. And that's the thing.
But don't you think that Americans think more positively about the history and what Canada does than what Canada actually does?
Yeah, oh yeah. Like, even Canadians think really positively about their own history. And that's the scary part that we've had to overcome in trying to educate people about what Canada is doing in Haiti. You go back as far as you want to. The one example I like to show is that our current prime minister's name is Paul Martin Jr. His father was, of course, Paul Martin Sr., and he was one of the more powerful federal politicians back in the 60s during the Vietnam War and during the invasion of the Dominican Republic. In 1965, a very similar situation had happened where the CIA had helped overthrow a democratically elected leader, Juan Bosch. The people had risen up and were about to take power back, and Lyndon Johnson decided to send in 20,000 Marines to put down that uprising. And Paul Martin Sr. at the time, you know, unlike any other foreign affairs minister in the hemisphere, just remained silent and complicit.
Mm.
And in Vietnam, Canada was playing a very, very complicit role. Up to 300 Canadian corporations were profiting directly from the war. We have our own military-industrial complex that is relative to the United States, and then half of it is owned by American companies.
Mm.
Canada today is involved in the war, you know, against the Afghanistan people. They're in a complementary role in the war in Iraq. They're justifying these wars. They're engineering their military so that it's more complementary to the United States military. They are obviously wedded to United States foreign policy, and yet somehow they're able to maintain this perception.
Well, I think it has to do with the whole Vietnam thing, when people were allowed to flee to Canada during the Vietnam War. I think that plays into it.
Yeah, and even, say, in the 1973 coup d'etat in Chile, a week after the coup, the Canadian government recognized the Pinochet regime.
Mm.
Even as people were in the stadiums being tortured and killed. But at the same time, they opened their borders to political refugees. So that's what they do, right? It's very double-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Implicit, but... And somehow, because of their control with their own corporate-owned media, they're able to maintain this perception. And the funny thing is, 1 month after the coup against Haiti, there was a hearing in Parliament, a standing committee on foreign affairs, where one guy from a think tank came in and said, the United States has asked us to take a lead role in Haiti because they're overtaxed in the Middle East. We enjoy a perception in the region that has us as a counterweight to the United States, so we have to take advantage of this perception.
Ah, he said that out of his mouth?
He actually said that. Carlo Dade is his name. And that's the way it's been playing out. And that, Canada actually helped plan the coup d'etat.
And we hold that thought, please, Anthony, because we have to take a break. I'm talking to Anthony Fenton, investigative journalist, writer for ZNet and the Dominion. He's joining us from Vancouver. I'm Liz Brown. We're talking about Haiti. Please stay with us.
I don't know why you can't turn around and say goodbye. All you know is when I'm with you.
Liz Brown will be live in the studio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., starting the 2006 series of the Wake Up Calls, but until then we'll play more of the best of the Wake Up Call following this edition of Traffic, Weather, and Local Commercials. Good morning, St. Louis, 28 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WPNU. I'm Howard Morton. This hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Kerry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Northbound 55 between 270 and Holly Hills, no problems to report there. Eastbound 44 between Merrimack River Bridge and Shrewsbury is lighter than normal. Eastbound 40 between Boone and Clayton Morrison looks good. Northbound 270 from 55 all the way to Manchester, no problems to report there. Westbound 55 70 split from Tudor to Poplar Street Bridge is on the move. Westbound 64 from Ball Avenue all the way to PSB. Traffic is lighter than normal in your 7:30 commute. Riverview at Bluff, there's a report of an accident. They're calling for road construction at Dunn Road. and Whistler Lake Drive on Old Paul's Ferry, as well as northbound Route 13 at 15. There should be intermittent daytime road closures from Rogers all the way to the 13-15 split. Also, Illinois 158 at 64, there'll be bridge maintenance operations, I'm sure, when things start to dry off. And Illinois 64 between 158 and Agreement Road, you can expect one lane closed during off-peak hours. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Carrie Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Carrie Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion is trusted therapy that deeply conditions and nourishes elbows, knees, and everywhere else skin thirsts for moisture, leaving your skin feeling healthy and smooth. Try Carrie today. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Wednesday, a tornado watch is in effect until 8 a.m. this morning. That means conditions are favorable for tornadoes, and that's in the WGNU listening area. Also, the National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm warning until 7:56, and that's for Madison County, and that begins from 7 o'clock till 8 o'clock, basically. So we'll keep you posted as more weather updates come in. Otherwise, Monday, breezy, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers, high in the mid-50s this evening. Colder, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, partly sunny, high in the upper 40s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the upper 30s. Then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain, a high in the upper 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 55 degrees under overcast skies. Lambert Field is reporting 56 in overcast skies as well. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. It's up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Come enjoy the psychological thriller Boy Gets Girl at the Theater Guild of Webster Groves, 517 Theater Lane in Webster, January 6th through 8th and 12th through the 15th. Shows are at 8 p.m. weeknights and 2 p.m. Sundays. For more information, call 962-0876. That's 962-0876.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-376-9913.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for thousands of our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
According to IRS statistics, the average settlement for accepted offers and compromise was between 12 and 15 cents per tax dollar owed, which means you could qualify to reduce your tax debt by as much as 85%. If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-376-9913. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-376-9913. 9913. That's 800-376-9913.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
The following is more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Until then, enjoy more of the best of the wake-up call.
Don't you see that's what's wrong? Everybody wants somebody to be their own piece of clay. Oh, everybody wants somebody.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-9468. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Don't forget, we broadcast live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. And if you missed an hour, go get an hour. We are archived daily. The wake-up call is on whiterosesociety.org. org. So you can go get an hour and listen to it. You can go listen to all 4 hours at whiterosesociety.org. Check out the website at lizbrown.com. That's LIZZBrown.com. We don't have blogs. We have blogitude. So you need to get to us. We have much, much, much to talk about. This morning we are talking about Haiti, and we are talking with investigative journalist Anthony Fenton. He is Canadian. He is joining us from Vancouver in British Columbia. Anthony, welcome back.
Hello.
And we're talking about the role of Canada in the coup d'etat that took place in Haiti. And again, we're talking about this whole this wonderful PR job that Canada has either done or had handed to them about their do no wrong in the world. But Canada has colonial attitudes and colonialistic actions.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and the fact is, we internally colonize indigenous peoples.
Talk right? to us about that. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I'll give you a quote here from a book that's called The Fourth World, An Indian Reality, written by a native person named George Manuel in 1974. It says, Canada resorted to major acts of violence less often than the United States because she was a prime beneficiary of the American aggression against the peoples of the plains. Canada, like where I live in British Columbia, all of this land is illegally occupied. There was never a treaty signed. We just took it, and we continue to take it.
Mm.
Illegally expropriated for the resources, for the land, so we can develop. And this is pretty much the case across the country. And indigenous people continue to resist this, you know, without, of course, the assistance of the settler society, of which I'm a part. And that's sort of what Canada's activities abroad.
And isn't it interesting, even the choice of word settler as opposed to occupier?
Yeah, settler, occupier, yeah, both at once, right?
There you go.
And unfortunately, this countenance is what we send abroad, right? But since we deny it internally, pretend it doesn't exist, we likewise deny and pretend it doesn't exist when we take this colonial mentality to places like Haiti. And so something like a peacekeeping, which is in, you know, the notion that the United Nations goes into these countries and is keeping the peace or making the peace, is turned on its head when we understand the reality of these occupations and see them for their true colonial nature. And there's a really good book, you know, this has been on my mind, you know, the myth of Canadian peacekeeping, because it's actually the a prime minister at the time, when I was talking about Paul Martin Sr., the prime minister at the time was Lester B. Pearson, and he is considered the founding father of peacekeeping, right? And there's a book written by a woman named Shireen H. Razak called Dark Threats and White Knights, The Somalia Affair, Peacekeeping and the New Imperialism, and she quotes Rudyard Kipling at the beginning.
Mm.
And then when I was in Venezuela, I mentioned that as well, because Canada is basically at the forefront of revising the United Nations Charter so that they can step into countries that they deem to have failed and say, we have the responsibility to protect these countries because they are unable to govern themselves. It's our responsibility.
If that's not Rudyard Kipling, I don't know what is.
Exactly. And but they're doing that. It's a new doctrine called the responsibility to protect. Canada unveiled this new international policy, and this term is peppered throughout it. And the architects of the coup d'etat in Haiti, I've interviewed a few of them, and one of them hosted a secret meeting in Canada a year before the coup where basically all of this was predicted, and his only excuse was, hey, this is the responsibility to protect. He kept repeating.
White man's burning.
Yeah. He kept repeating it like a mantra.
Now, what is it about Haiti? What is the draw? What is the connection? Why this obsession with Haiti? Now, I get the part about we don't want the world to feel that and to remember that Haiti is the people that were enslaved, and they overturned the most powerful government in the world at the time. They kicked Napoleon's behind. We don't want the Haitian people to ever be able to resonate with that, and that to ever resonate to other people of African descent. I get that concern. Is there something additional to that?
Well, definitely. There, President Aristide himself was regarded as a threat, you know, the threat of a good example.
The threat of a good example, I like that.
When he was being demonized in exile in 1991 after he was overthrown, you'd see him compared to Fidel Castro. You'd see his relationship with Fidel Castro called into question. Haiti did have good relations with Cuba up to the time that Aristide was overthrown. Now, I'll mention that I'll bring Canada into this again real quickly, because Haiti has always been envisioned by American elites and businessmen as a place where they can sew up their T-shirts and their pants and at the cheapest possible price, because Haiti is the lowest on the rung as far as wage levels go in the hemisphere, and they want to keep it that way. Aristide and his government were fighting to increase wages, much to the chagrin of the local factory owners, such as Andy Appaid, who was the leader of the Group of 184, this so-called political opposition that the United States funded with Canada's help and helped create. And the largest T-shirt manufacturer in this hemisphere is a company called Gildan Activewear. They provide 40% of the United States T-shirt market, and their main subcontractor in Haiti is Andy Appaid. And they've recently just moved. What they're doing is they're setting up two huge manufacturing hubs in the Dominican Republic and in Haiti. And the labor-intensive stuff will be done in Haiti.
And that's just a manufacturer's dream. They don't have to ship it from China.
Yep.
They don't have to ship it from, I mean, well, Haiti is how many miles away from the United States?
600.
600 miles.
Yep. Yeah, and Gildan, they just set up a factory in North Carolina, so it's real lickety-split. And most of where all these massacres are taking place and where the support for Aristide remains strongest, that's where the biggest labor pool is for people like Andy Appaid.
Mm.
So they want.
And tell us who Andy Appaid is.
He's actually an American citizen, but he's the head of this. It's a coalition of businessmen and women and other associations in Haiti called the Group of 184. Between the years of 2000 and 2004. The United States, through the U.S. Agency for International Development, various organizations like the National Endowment for Democracy, the International Republican Institute, and a whole labyrinth of these organizations and agencies helped to organize this political opposition. And he would come out as a spokesperson, a businessman, calling himself Haitian, of course. He's a Haitian of Arab descent.
He's a very light-skinned Haitian.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying,
so like a Creole, the French, because they have that issue in Haiti as well, dark skin versus light skin, white versus black.
Right.
And elite and elite versus poor.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's on that side, the elite side,
mm-hmm.
light skin side. And he and the Group of 184 presented this so-called social contract, and their premise was Aristide is authoritarian, Aristide is a dictator, he's a human rights abuser, he's undemocratic, he doesn't respect the opposition. The standard stuff we can call them what they are, and they're neo-fascist.
They're terrorists.
Terrorists, yes. But at the time, of course, with the help of the media, they're able to paint this picture that they're truly democratic. And the Group of 184 was closely connected to another organization in Washington called the Haiti Democracy Project, a real Orwellian sort of name if I've ever seen one. And they worked together hand in hand, back and forth, and this all culminated. They were created at the end of 2002, and by 2003, you began to see the demands increasing. We can't negotiate with Aristide. He must be gotten rid of. And then they manufactured all sorts of scenarios where the Group of 184 would have a demonstration, and they would provoke the police, or they would provoke the militants in the popular neighborhoods, and there would be violence, and it would always be blamed on Aristide. And then they just created the conditions, the perception again, that this is just a basket case. This is typical standard stuff in Haiti. They just don't know what they're doing down there.
Therefore, thereby responsibility to protect. Later
yeah.
on. And we have to take a break. Anthony Fenton, investigative journalist, is a writer for GeneNet. He is joining us from Vancouver, British Columbia. We're talking about Haiti. We're talking about the Canadian connection to the coup d'etat. I'm Liz Brown. Anthony, is that phrase, threat of a good example, is that yours?
No, I heard that first from Noam Chomsky.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Am I stealing this if I take this? We'll be back. I'm talking to Anthony Fenton, investigative journalist. We're talking about Haiti. We'll be back.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, enjoy more of the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Your 3 hours.
The Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Washington. In a move that can be best described as punitive, the Justice Department is going to start a criminal investigation concerning the leak of classified wiretap information that the administration has been conducting against American citizens. The two New York Times reporters who broke the story a few weeks ago could be forced to testify before a grand jury and made to identify who inside the NSA gave them their information. There's also word now that the National Security Agency may have indeed been spying on its own personnel, as well as any contacts the personnel might have had with Congress or the press. This surveillance is believed to have started before the 9/11 attacks and was targeted at anyone inside the intelligence departments who might be considered a disgruntled employee. And Dateline La Paz. The newly elected president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, says the first thing he's going to do is cut his salary and the salaries of lawmakers, ministers, and deputy ministers by 50%. Morales says Bolivia is in the midst of a democratic revolution, and he intends to make the government respond because the economic burden has to be shared by all. The salaries will be approximately $1,100 a month. Morales won the presidential race 2 weeks ago and will be inaugurated on January 22nd. Morales says the money he saves will be used to hire more workers for education and health care. In addition, he plans to nullify some contracts that foreign companies have had to develop Bolivia's natural resources because he says the worst of them are simply looting the goodness of the country. Other contracts will be renegotiated to make the foreign entities partners instead of owners of various Bolivian resources. This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update, brought to you by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
And now, the Lincoln Middle School Poetry Club.
Mothers, daddy-os, you've already given us so much, so we're not asking you to teach us Dutch. Just a little involvement in our school is cooler than cool. Because studies show a little participation increases our chances for graduation.
A little involvement goes a long way. For ways to get involved in your child's school, join your local PTA or visit pta.org.
A message from the Ad Council and National PTA.
Examine life from the police perspective. Put down the police scanner and pick up Gary Wiegert on WGNU.net.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, and get a new attitude.
Once upon a time, there was a cottage where lived a young boy. One day, his parents went for a walk.
Boy?
They said, for they never got round to naming him.
Please look after the cottage.
I will.
The boy promised. But as soon as they walked down the hill, the boy yelled,
"Ha!"
His parents ran back to the cottage.
Where?
They asked, but the boy only laughed. Furious, they left again.
"Ha!"
The boy yelled again.
Where?
Asked his parents, but the boy only laughed. Again they left, angrier than before. Suddenly, an energy hog appeared.
Hello.
Now, an energy hog is what you have when humans waste energy.
Boy, am I hungry,
said the hog. Terrified, the boy cried out,
"Hog!"
But his parents, suspecting another trick, ignored him. So the boy logged on to energyhog.org, played cool games, learned how to rid the cottage of the energy hog, and became a hero to his family. And the moral is, to use energy wisely, log on to energyhog.org. Or, if you cry hog, it better be a hog calling contest.
This public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Liz Brown is on vacation, or she will be back tomorrow morning to start the 2006 series of The Wake-Up Call. Till then, enjoy more of the best of The Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Come away with me in the night. Come away with me and I will write you a song. Come away with me on a bus. Come away where they can't stand.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Come away with me. This is Liz Brown and the Wake Up Call. My number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. You can email me at revolution@lizbrown.com. I'm talking to Anthony Fenton, investigative journalist, writer for ZNet. We're talking about Haiti and the Canada connection. We were talking about the group of 184, but I would kind of like to switch for a second, Anthony. Let's talk about the appointment of your new ambassador from Canada to Haiti.
You mean Hans Tippenauer?
Yes, I didn't know how to pronounce his name, so that's why I did it that way.
Okay, yeah.
Tippenauer.
He's tied up. He's bound up with the group of 184 too, because his nephew's a guy by the name of Hans Tippenauer. He's the first guy to get on the airwaves or the mainstream media and applaud the so-called rebels who came in from the Dominican Republic to militarily destabilize the Aristide regime as freedom fighters. He called them freedom fighters who are coming to support us. And Robert Tippenauer, he's been illegally appointed as ambassador to Canada. But that doesn't matter because everything they're doing is illegal and they're getting away with it. But he was accepted. His credentials were accepted by our Governor General, Adrian Clarkson. And interestingly, we now have a new Governor General who's been selected, and she's a Haitian Canadian woman, Michelle Jean. This is being perceived many different ways. Of course, the Haitian Canadian community, which is substantial, there are I think approximately 200,000. People of Haitian descent in Canada, mostly concentrated in Montreal.
And you have a Haitian-Canadian Chamber of Commerce as well.
Yeah, we do. Robert Tippenauer, he was the head of the first ever Haitian-Canadian Chamber of Commerce, and this was set up after the coup to draw Canadian investment into Haiti and link up Canadian businessmen with Haitian businessmen and, of course, the interim Haitian government. The interim Haitian government is made up of a lot of former putschists, people affiliated with the Duvalier era of military dictatorships. The nephew of the current Prime Minister, Gerard Latortue, his name is Yuri Latortue. He is one of the key, I've been told by good sources that he's one of the key narco traffickers in Haiti. He's connected to death squads, and he's been trying to, for many, many months, get weapons into the hands of the Haitian police so that they can better repress those who are calling for Aristide's return. So Robert Tippenauer is sort of just built into this whole elite framework. You know, 1% of Haiti's population controls roughly 50% of the wealth. There are more millionaires in Haiti per capita than any other Caribbean country, and they're the ones who are calling the shots. And Andy Appaid, I'd also might like to mention about him because he's been directly implicated in working with gang leaders to kill supporters of Aristide. He's been getting them guns, so he's not just a factory sweatshop owner. He's also a terrorist.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. The people that provided the hatchets and the machetes to the Hutus and the Tutsis, they're terrorists too. You can't throw the stone and hide the hand.
There you go.
He's just as responsible. And I want to go back to Tippenauer because this is a big deal that Tippenauer is in this position because he's kind of like setting or paving the way for Canadian companies to get their first dibs in Haiti.
Oh, most definitely, and they are. I mean, there's that. That's another part of it, right? The procurement industry for so-called reconstruction contracts. It's like a $200 billion a year industry, and it's corporations like Canada's SNC-Lavalin. You know, they get like $6 billion a year in contracts in Iraq, Afghanistan, Ivory Coast, Sierra Leone, and Haiti. Right? They built a $20 million embassy in Haiti. After the coup, it came up in September of 2004, and they were involved in this big meeting with Tippenauer. Like, what part of the pie, what piece of the pie can we get?
Mm.
Tippenauer's there helping just figure it all out.
And aren't there incentives that the Canadian government is giving to Tippenauer?
Incentives.
The companies that he's bringing there, the companies that are being employed, is the Canadian government actively participating in that?
Oh, yeah, like they would be a key negotiator. What we would have is the Canadian International Development Agency and other Canadian agencies acting as intermediaries for certain, you know. So, like the SNC-Lavalin, it won't be unusual to see them walking around with Canadian government officials, you know. They're just sort of an extension of the Canadian imperial state. They are.
And will Canada go in and do what the United States had through Halliburton and Brown and Root has done, these big reconstruction contracts in Haiti, just like they did in Iraq?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. There's even a name for it. It's called the Interim Cooperation Framework. That was sort of spearheaded by the World Bank.
Mm.
And the World Bank is working with, you guess it, the political opposition to Aristide. You know, they're on the steering committee for all this, but Canada is one of the, I think they're the second largest donor behind the United States. They pledged, you know, like they did in Iraq, they pledged billions of dollars to help reconstruct Haiti. And most of the emphasis is on security, because what they're doing, like in Iraq and Afghanistan, is undertaking sham elections. These are scheduled for November and December of this year now. And so they're doing a lot of aesthetic work, like they're paving roads to make it easier for the tanks, the UN tanks, to roll down. And SNC-Lavalin and other Canadian companies will help with that.
And the reason why the Hugo Chavez story is connected to this is because the stronger that Hugo Chavez gets, the stronger that his country gets, the more ability that he has to reach out to help people like Aristide.
Yeah, exactly. At this point, Chavez is much stronger today even than when he was in February of 2004 when Aristide was still there. And who knows the type of relationship that they would have built by now.
Well, he offered a place for Aristide to come. He wanted Aristide to come to Venezuela when the coup d'etat took place.
Yeah, I know. And it's probably lucky for Chavez that he hasn't been hosting Aristide.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, of course, they've been blaming all the violence. They've continued to blame it on Aristide from South Africa. They said that he's fomenting the violence. Roger Noriega, who, thank goodness, finally quit his position as Assistant Secretary of State. But yeah, the relationship, I'm sure it's ongoing too. We don't hear much from John Bertrand Aristide, but we know Chavez stands behind his position, and that is that Aristide is a democratically elected president, and for there to be a resolution, and he's echoing the Haitian people here when he says it, you know, that Aristide has to be included. And we don't see this. It doesn't look like that's on the horizon for the elections, but the people continue to take to the streets, and they continue to get killed, and the struggle is going to continue.
Anthony Fitton, where can people read more about what you've written about Haiti and the Canadian connection?
Yeah, there's ZNet. That's www.zmag.org. I've also co-written a book that's coming out just this week called Canada and Haiti, Waging War on the Poor Majority with Eve Engler.
No, I'd like to get a copy of that.
Sure, I'll make sure we get you one.
Excellent. Anthony Fitton, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Take care.
Bye.
Listen, folks, Liz Brown, Wake Up Call. I'll be back, same place. Ooh, this week is just flying by. We're a Thursday tomorrow. I'll be back, same time, same place. Tomorrow, stay strong.
I'm hearing revolution in the air.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Coming up in the 8 and 9 o'clock hour, filling in for Liz Brown, it's Keith Gray. We'll stay tuned. More of great talk radio right here on AM 920 WGN.
It is time for us to use our power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born without it.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember that. I will never say that progress has been made. If you took a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, how can this
matter? Well, the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. Families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Michael Barr. One Texas man who lost his home because of wildfires says, "We hate losing our stuff, but at least everybody is okay." Firefighters in Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma continue to battle wildfires that have destroyed homes in its path. ABC Steve Olson Sami has more from Oklahoma City.
Everyone here is praying for rain, but there is none in the forecast for a very long time.
There is too much rain in California. Besides flooding, the heavy rain is causing other dangerous problems.
On fire-scarred hillsides throughout Southern California, a lack of vegetation increases the possibility of mudslides and destruction.
ABC's Miguel Marquez. For the first time in 51 years, rain is expected for today's Tournament of Roses parade in Pasadena. Last night, parade goers camped out to get a good spot. ABC's Wendy Birch has more.
It's not as lively as it has been other years, but what the people lack for in numbers here, they certainly make up for in devotion to a parade, a commitment to be comfortable in concrete, and a determination to stay out here and weather the storm.
For college football fans, grab some snacks and a lounge chair. 6 bowl games are scheduled today, including this afternoon's Fiesta Bowl on ABC. Former Ohio State running back Maurice Claret is wanted in connection with the New Year's morning robbery. A new study suggests antidepressant drugs work well under the right conditions.
Antidepressants can help the seriously depressed, according to researchers, but only if the doctor is willing to do some serious work with the patient. A government-funded study found 1/3 of patients recovered with the first depression drug they tried, but the ones who found most relief took higher than typical doses and changed doses frequently in the first 3 months under close monitoring by their doctors, a level of care that few get. One researcher says the key conclusion is doctors must quickly assess the patient's reaction and tailor the treatment very carefully.
Karen Chase, this is ABC News.
This year, I made resolutions I can actually keep. Like, I resolve not to climb Mount Everest and not to write the great American novel. It's so simple, it can't fail. I also resolve to have a nutritious breakfast every day.
Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added has twice the calcium of yogurt, twice the protein of an egg, and only 150 calories.
And I drink it in the morning and still have plenty of time to not train for a marathon.
Nestle Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added is serious morning fuel.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
Here they are all the way from Liverpool.
There are thousands marching on Washington as...
A generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477. Ameriprise Financial Services member, NASD and SIPC.
Police in Locust Grove, Georgia, say an apparent murder-suicide has left a man and his 3 children dead. Authorities say the man's wife told police she was beaten by her husband. Imagine if you only had a new car that lasted only 2 years. You'd be disappointed, but that's well past the expectations of 2 motor vehicles.
Your heap won't start in the cold? 2 vehicles have gone a total 7 miles, lasting 2 years, and were only expected to last 3 months. They're the 2 robot Mars rovers, Spirit and Opportunity. As big as golf carts, and like any vehicles, performance depends on road conditions. Theirs include 100-mile-an-hour dust Devils in temps of 67 degrees below zero. They succeeded in their main mission, finding evidence that water once flowed on Mars. And they've sent back more than 120,000 pictures. Will they stay longer or become like this?
In my case, sir, the question is totally without meaning.
Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Michael Barr, ABC News.
Here's another WGNU update of news. This report brought to you by Sonic. Not just good, it's Sonic good. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. In the news, the St. Louis City Board of Election Commissioners is throwing out a recall petition over fraud. Board Chairman Ed Martin says the petition to recall 22nd Ward Alderman Jeffrey Boyd contained signatures of people who were deceased. Martin says whoever is at fault could face jail time. The election board will investigate the matter before turning their findings over to federal and city authorities. In other news, as 2006 begins, some area families continue to search for loved ones who went missing in 2005. Among those are 4-year-old Kerman Tony Jr. and his 19-year-old cousin Anquiet Parker, both of East St. Louis. The pair vanished without a trace in November. Police in Missouri continue to search for 26-year-old Amanda Jones, who was 9 months pregnant when she disappeared from Hillsboro in August. Also still missing is 13-year-old Bianca Piper of Lincoln County. She was last seen March 10th in Foley. There are no new leads in any of those cases. Governor Matt Blunt is endorsing the recommendations of the Missouri Task Force on Eminent Domain. Blunt formed the task force last spring after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling allowing the use of eminent domain for private development. The task force recommendations include legislation defining the terms blight, public use, and just compensation, and laws to limit eminent domain powers to elected or appointed officials. And AOL's chief spam fighter is taking a look at the top 10 internet schemes of 2005. Charles Stiles says these scams have become very organized in efforts to steal identities and bank account numbers.
In 2005, spam really took a turn to what we call SOS, or special order spam. It seems to be targeted directly to individuals. It's not the broadcast spam about getting the lowest mortgage rate in years. Now it's talking about your mortgage application or confirmations. And then sometimes they have confirmation numbers right in the subject line.
Other topics that spam scammers use include pharmaceutical, financial, pornography, weight loss, and natural disaster emails. Contact your internet service provider if you come across any suspicious emails, or contact Missouri Attorney General Jay Nixon's office at 800-392-8222. That's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by Sonic, America's Drive-In. Drive into Sonic this Tuesday night for half-price burgers. That's right, half price. Get a classic Sonic burger for half the price from 5 p.m. until close on Tuesdays. It's not just good, it's Sonic good. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Kerry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Northbound 55 between 270 and Holly Hills, no problems are reported. Eastbound 44 from Merrimack River Bridge to Shrewsbury, traffic is lighter than normal. Eastbound 40 from Boone all the way to Clayton Morrison looks good. Northbound 270 from 55 to Manchester, no problems there. Westbound 5570 from Tudor Avenue onto the Poplar Street Bridge looks good. Westbound 64 from Bow Avenue onto the Poplar Street Bridge is lighter than normal. Westbound Natural Bridge at Springdale, there's road construction. The right lane is closed this hour. Old Halls Ferry between Dunn and Whisper Lake, look for widening of the roadway there, so you may see some lane restrictions a little later on today. Illinois 158 to 64, look for road maintenance operations having lane closures going on. That should be going on a little bit later. And also Illinois 164 between 50 and 158, look for road construction there as well. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Kerry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Kerry Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion is trusted therapy that deeply conditions and nourishes elbows, knees, and anywhere else skin thirsts for moisture, leaving your skin feeling healthy and smooth. Try Kerry today. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, breezy, mostly cloudy, a chance of showers, a high in the mid-50s today, mostly cloudy and colder this evening, with a low in the mid-30s. Tuesday, partly sunny, high in the upper 40s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the upper 30s. And on Wednesday, mostly cloudy with a chance for rain. The high should be in the upper 40s. Currently, the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have overcast conditions and 54 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 56 and clouds. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. This hour, we have Keith Gray filling in for her. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of this 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Good morning, WGNU listeners. This is Keith Gray, sitting in for Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call. The song you are just hearing right now is called Higher Ground. That is the name of my show that comes on from 1 to 2 p.m. daily. But this morning, again, I'll be sitting in for Liz Brown from 8 to 10 and taking your calls and hopefully learning something and possibly even imparting some knowledge if I'm lucky. Lots of things going on in the world today. It's nice outside in St. Louis. I mean, it's a little wet, but I'd rather have that than the snow and ice. But again, lots of things going on in the world today. The Bush administration is posturing itself to deal with the situation of the surveillances when they come back, when Congress comes back from the break, and they're basically, it seems almost as if they're trying to align themselves or set themselves up to go after the individual who disclosed the information rather than dealing with whether the situation is legal or not. At this point, what they're doing and what they seem to be trying to get across is that the individual who disclosed the information broke the law. But if the actions are illegal, the person is a whistleblower and not a terrorist or a traitor. The individual would be a whistleblower, and I think it's being the Democrats and some Republicans, actually. I saw Arl Inspector, and he's not necessarily aligning himself with the administration on this matter. There are several Republicans, high-profile Republicans, that are placing themselves in positions to not necessarily sign off on this, and I don't know how well that bodes or how bad. I think that bodes, actually, in my opinion, I think that bodes pretty badly for the administration in this matter. Although they did get a few poll percentage points, an increase in their poll percentage points over the past couple of weeks because they're starting to talk about drawing down the number of troops in Iraq after so many months of talk about staying the course and not giving any idea of an exit strategy. They talked about drawing down the troops only briefly and only in a cursory manner, but they are starting to get percentage poll points out of that. Interestingly enough, I don't know whether the situation would require a drawing down of troops because even though there were no attacks on the day of the election, there have been several attacks and several U.S. Military deaths following the elections. So is this a time to draw down troops, or is it a time for withdrawal? I don't know. It seems that this situation won't be coming to any type of resolution soon. And then with the accompanying scandals, it definitely won't be coming to any resolution soon. The number to dial, the local number, to call into the station and talk and get your opinions out there is 314-454-0400. The long distance number is 1-877-920-9468 or 1-877-920-WGNU. You can also hear me on the internet at www.wgnu.net. Following this program at 10 a.m. will be Kathleen Schweitzer. From noon to 1 p.m., it's Stanford Karp with the World According to Karp. From 1 p.m., it's to be announced, because that would normally be the Keith Gray Higher Ground program, which is an exemplary show, but I don't think he'll be on today because he's on now. And then from 2 to 4 p.m., Dr. Laura Schlesinger will take on the day. As I said, the Bush administration seems to be setting themselves up for dealing with the scenarios that are going to occur after Congress comes back from this break. Also, Tom DeLay is preparing his defense. He basically stated that he's going to fight until he is exonerated. Hopefully, we'll come to some type of resolution on that also. Again, 314-454-0400. The long distance number is 1-877-920-9468 or 1-877-920-WGNU. Also, I haven't heard anything in the news about the Katrina victims. They are scheduled to be removed or basically thrown out of the hotels on, I believe it's the 1st of February. And I haven't heard any discussion about their plight in the news, good or bad. But that worries me because they aren't being discussed. And I think they should be at the forefront of our thoughts. There is talk of tsunamis in California, but Katrina has already occurred. Those individuals' homes and belongings and lives have already been decimated by a natural disaster. We need to deal with those individuals. I'm going to go to the phone lines and talk to you because I know you guys have something to say. How you doing today, Ike?
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good, sir.
Man, I can't say happy nothing because it ain't good for my people all over this world.
It seems to be
pretty
bad.
I'm just taking it one day at a time. Now, I'm glad you were talking about the things about they were talking about going back in the 205. They mentioned nothing about Katrina.
Right.
They mentioned the tsunami.
The one in
the one over in Indonesia.
Right.
That they mentioned that, and then doing that once they can run everywhere to help people don't look like us, where we go to like tourism, but them people down there, they're talking about the Big Easy. I don't know what they call it, but them people down there go down there and they party with the poor and they go to see people, go to the funerals and all that stuff. You find me?
Yeah.
Everything that we do, and like Farrakhan say, they embellish what we build.
What's interesting is that the areas down in Katrina or in New Orleans that are party areas are pretty much functional now. I mean, they're even talking about holding Mardi Gras in New Orleans.
But did you hear the aftermath after that conversation? They say, some people say, Mardi Gras for what?
Well, again,
spoke out and said,
yeah.
Mardi Gras for what? Wait a minute. If you can't get everybody in the place, get water running, get all that, that cleanup is going to be humongous.
Yeah. Well, again, and the areas that they need to really clean up, I mean, the areas that they've already cleaned up are predominantly the areas where the Mardi Gras, it seems to me that they spent, I don't know if these were government funds being spent in this area, but if they are, it's a travesty that the Beacon Street area is up and running, and then you got people who are still in Iowa.
And they still have people down and clean that place up when they were still getting them people out. And this black guy, and I said, where do he live at? He said, I'm staying. You don't know if he's still there staying about I'm going to do this. But then Ray Nagin, he's kind of wishy-washy. You know, I've been reading up on him, too.
Mm-hmm.
He was Republican at one time.
Yeah, but...
But there was a lot of heat on him. But he's steadfast. But I think they're controlling that man.
Well, the thing about that is that when he stepped up and said that I mean, he said this in the very initial stages of the incident. He stepped up and stated that people of New Orleans should be able to come back to New Orleans and help rebuild the city because it is their community.
That's right. I heard that from North Drum Street.
But
you know.
he got no support
he got
from
no
anybody.
Support
from,
the West
he got no support from the government,
that's
from
right.
the governor of the state. He got no support from the federal
Haley
government.
Haley Barbour, you're talking about?
The woman. The female.
He's the governor of Louisiana, isn't
okay.
it? She's the governor of Louisiana, Haley
right.
Barbour.
No, it's the female.
It's the female, but Haley Barbour, he's
The senator.
The senator, whatever.
Congressman.
He makes me sick as well.
But the thing about it is, when he stepped up and made that assertion, he should have gotten some feedback, either positive or negative, because basically nobody said anything. And he stayed on that particular topic for approximately a week. And people from New Orleans were shown on the news talking about they didn't want to go back or that they couldn't go back.
That's
or that
right.
There was no support for them there. And the federal government is literally pouring billions of dollars in there. That should have been the support for those individuals to go back and help rebuild New Orleans instead of putting Halliburton down there controlling the situation and hiring Mexican workers.
Now, the Jews and people that came here and was on TV and said, hey, they're not helping us here in St. Louis. I told a few people I met, I just hang out with me a few days and you'll see what's going on here. These people want to get the hell up out of here. St. Louis ain't doing enough for them people, really.
Well, and
they're handpicked what they do. That's an insult to me.
Well, the thing about it, though, is that the simple fact of the matter is that in the United States of America, there was a natural disaster. And the federal government, through FEMA and through the federal government itself, has stated that billions of dollars will be poured back into that area to return New Orleans to its greatness. Now, if that money is poured into that area, why wouldn't the individuals who were displaced by this hurricane by Katrina, why wouldn't those individuals be the ones who should reap the benefit from the federal government pouring money back into that area?
That too. They said they ain't got none, and some people, you know, they're very negative. They pour anyway, I guess something, but they still down there.
Yeah, but you don't have to be poor.
That's what I'm trying to say. When this happened, money didn't mean nothing. They're just trying to stay alive. A dollar didn't mean anything, Keith.
Granted. But the thing about it is, here's a situation that's been created. And even though it was created by a disaster, this situation has been created where we could actually watch a true American city being created. We could take the monies that are being poured into that area and those people who were not necessarily of the best in the best financial situations could be placed in better financial situations. They could be given the jobs that are down there that need to be done in New Orleans are good paying
and they work the jobs in the news up there and down to the Beacon Street, whatever they were. They're working on down there.
Granted,
the first place. They didn't live down there. They worked down there.
But and those aren't the jobs I'm talking about. I'm talking about the construction jobs that are being created now.
There's plenty of work down there people do
for years. But what I'm saying is those jobs were not subsidized by billions of federal dollars.
Oh, okay.
Now they are.
So you're trying to say they're going to put their people in place.
I'm saying that's what they're doing now.
Oh, we're doing it now. So, I'm going to let you go because somebody want to talk. I won't be rude the first year. Now, just be honest. What is their fate, Keith?
I'm sorry, what is their fate?
What is their fate? Our people. What is the fate of the black people that look like me and you down there that live down there? Those are New Orleans. They stayed there and built up that state down there. They are the forerunners.
Well, here's the thing, Ike, and I'll answer that question for you. I don't believe in fate. I believe in action. I believe that if those people are given the opportunity by their federal government, by the United States of America, by two Americans, if those people are given the opportunity to go back to New Orleans could be the crown jewel of the United States.
Because it's going to be real done.
And it's going to be done right, and it's going to be done fabulously, and it's going to be done hopefully in a way where it has a place in New Orleans for the people of New Orleans.
You know, but I'm not a hater now, but when I look around where I live at North County, but I was raised up in the city, I've been down there all the time.
Uh-huh.
I'm so sick of looking at these people, these green cards, out here doing nothing, lying about Walmart. They ain't paying nothing. It's on the TV every day. And these people still rumping them stores. We're going to start getting out to the streets, Keith, in some kind of way because we ain't doing nothing. We're going backwards.
All right, man.
Okay.
Thanks for your call, Ike. I agree with that to some degree, but I also agree, and he mentioned something about fate. I'm not a firm believer in fate, man. I believe you determine your own fate. I believe that if you work, I believe if you place yourself in the positions, you determine your own fate. The only difference between a lucky man and a man who's unlucky is that the lucky man prepared. There's no such thing as luck. Luck happens when you put yourself in the right position at the right time. And the best thing to do is keep yourself in the right position. Going back to the phone lines. How you doing today, Obadiah?
Yes, how you doing, Mr. King?
What's up, sir?
Yeah, I agree with the gentleman what he said a little, you know, some of the things that he said.
Well, some of it is conventional wisdom, so I understand where he's coming from. But by the same token, man, if you look back at history, if everybody accepted conventional wisdom, where would we be? I mean, black people, white people in general, if everybody just said, you know, that's the way it's always been.
Yeah.
If you always do what you always did, then you always get what you always got.
And, yeah, you know, Keith, you know, I'm a person like this. I believe in the Bible. Mm-hmm. I believe in a God.
Okay.
I just don't fool with religion.
Yeah. Okay.
I said that to say this. If you look, man, everything in the world that nature has made deals with its own. Now, you don't have to have the attitude to think that you are better,
mm-hmm.
but you love yourself and you continue to teach your kids to love themselves. And by loving themselves, they're going to love what looks like them. Seeing is believing. But you know what? When you allow what we're seeing today, and I know this year you're going to see the difference in the education system. If you want to, when you talk about the Katrina storm down there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me show you something about the education system. When you educate an animal, they call conditioning an animal.
Right.
But a person, when you educate him, you call it an education. If you remember the storm, compare black people and poor people, especially black people, with the dolphins that was in Louisiana. Did you know here's an animal that loves water? That nature breeded him. God created him to understand and to love water and to live with other dolphins. Did you know he had been conditioned to not to even know how to survive in a storm?
Sure. I mean, that makes sense.
Well, you see, when you look at it from that, then the wisdom tell you, what is our kids being taught? Why is it that we are talking about, well, black folks are this, you know, white folks, and we don't get the federal government? These people, the federal government allows...
But Obadiah, and here is my belief in that matter. Even though we have, and in some instances, a disdain for the federal government. Some people have a total distrust of the federal government. That does not mean that they're not supposed to do their job.
Well,
that does not give them the right. That does not give them the ability to neglect you.
But who's out there protesting it? Back in the 50s and the 60s, we protested against the government. That's how we got the federal government to send troops into Arkansas to get black kids into a public school. Well, because we were protesting.
To some degree,
hey, our kids are setting up, you're going to school, passing an exam, and the kids can't pass them too much is because what they or what have the system got out there is player game. It's nothing but like a Las Vegas thing in America.
But you're talking about different. And see, and that's another misconception is that black kids are the only ones that aren't passing these tests.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not talking about that.
Okay.
I'm talking about all of the kids that have been persuaded
all
over the world. In the United States is going around with this kind of stuff, getting people to do that. But you only hear about the people who want this type of lifestyle.
Okay.
But the people who knows better knows what it's going to lead to.
See,
I've lived my life.
And
you have lived yours. You have lived part of your life.
And I agree. But
you understand that all of this stuff that we haven't, mm-hmm. and our kids are being taught, and we're looking at our kids and can't do nothing about it. It's something we can't do about it.
I disagree because I think that you can do something about your kids. And see, and that's something that I taught in school, so I know what the power of an involved parent is like. It's not a question of whether you can do the work that your child's doing, because some kids are taking calculus and some parents have never gone past basic algebra or basic math. The problem is not so much that you have to do what your kids do, that you have to know what they know. You have to make sure that teacher is giving your kid what they're supposed to. That education in that school belongs to your child. And if you don't get it, that teacher and that system has stolen something from your family. And it's something that you cannot get back.
And I agree wholeheartedly with you. And the only thing I say, sir, is that, hey, to gain an education is just like two tribes of people in the Bible, Jacob and Esau.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? This was when they was, before they was born, come out of their mother's womb, it was claimed that they was a nation fighting among each other. One was trying to take the rights of the other. And in that Bible, the only place that I see where God said he hates somebody is when he said, Jacob I love, Esau I hate. It's because why? Jacob sold his birthright to Esau. And Esau got his birthright because he knew Jacob was hungry. The same way that we have sold everything out, man, for another nation, for a purpose of trying to do better, and we are not doing it. And we are not gaining it.
I agree with some of that, but I don't think we have sold our nation out to try and be like or try and get something from somebody else. I think we are in a position in a nation to where we have to make some concessions, but we don't have to make as many concessions as we're making. I think that we can definitely do better, but I think all of our problems, a number of our problems, stem from the fact that we do accept some things that we shouldn't accept. And by no means am I disparaging large groups of people, but by the same token, we do accept some things that we shouldn't accept.
If something don't come along, geez, if we don't have a new generation of people to come along and take over for us, this is why God, or nature, allows us to get old for our kids. Through our experience is better than what you can get from knowledge through that book.
Book knowledge is only one part, and that's something that I stress on every time I get an opportunity to speak, either on a radio or in a forum. Book knowledge is only one facet of education.
Yep,
thanks for the call, Obadiah. Book knowledge is one facet of education, and it's not even the biggest facet of education. You learn, you get most of your learning when you leave school. Doctors do it, practical knowledge. Lawyers do it, there's practical knowledge. Practical knowledge is the lion's share of your education. I'll be right back after this traffic and commercial break. I'm Keith Gray, sitting in for Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call. Be right back. Stay tuned, callers, and hang on.
Joy, I've got joy down in my soul because there's something about the Spirit of Jesus. It gives me such joy, 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 joy. Well, I can sing, sing, sing. Well, I can sing, oh, yes, my Lord.
Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. For the look at this hour's traffic and weather, this hour's traffic is sponsored by Carrie Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Northbound 270 between Olive and Page, there's an accident. The left lane is blocked. Eastbound 70 at Natural Bridge, look for an accident there. The right lane is blocked. Northbound 55 between 270 and Holly Hills, no problems to report there. Eastbound 44 between Merrimack River Bridge all the way into Shrewsbury is lighter than normal. Eastbound 40 between Boone Bridge and Clayton Morrison, everything looks good. Northbound 270 from 55 to Manchester, everything is on the move. Westbound 5570 from Tudor onto the PSV looks good. Westbound 64 from Bow Avenue to the PSV looks good as well. Actually, the traffic there is lighter than normal. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Carrie Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion. Carrie Nourishing Shea Butter Lotion is trusted therapy that deeply conditions and nourishes elbows, knees, and everywhere else skin thirsts for moisture, leaving your skin feeling healthy and smooth. Try Carrie today. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Breezy, mostly cloudy. Chance of showers today, high in the mid-50s. This evening, mostly cloudy. Colder with a low in the mid-30s. For Tuesday, partly sunny, high in the upper 40s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the upper 30s. Then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy, a chance of rain, high in the upper 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU under mostly cloudy skies, we have 54 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting clouds in 53. Liz Brown will be live in the studio beginning at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. But for the rest of this show today, we have none other than Keith Gray. He'll be up next. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
How many types of owls live in Missouri? Find out at the Rockwoods Reservation at 2751 Glencoe Road in Wildwood on Friday, January 6th from 7 to 9 p.m. Please dress for the weather because the program includes an outdoor hike. To sign up, call 636-458-2236. Something for you from WGNU.
Aw, are you thirsty?
If you're a cat owner, you should know subtle behavioral changes can sometimes be early signs of illness.
Wow, you really need a brushing.
Increased thirst, decreased grooming, and many other changes can be harder to detect in cats. And cat owners may not notice a change until the disease is advanced.
You don't seem yourself lately.
That's why every cat should receive a wellness exam twice a year. Wellness exams can help your veterinarian detect, treat, or ideally prevent health problems before they become serious.
I think it's time you had a checkup.
Call your veterinarian and schedule your cat's wellness exam today. Or visit avma.org for more information. A message from the American Veterinary Medical Association and your local veterinarians.
Need to get it off your chest? 314-454-0400. 1-877-920-WGNU. Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. The cure for the common cause. Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, WGNU listeners. This is Keith Gray on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. I'm sitting in for the venerable Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call, and I'm going to get back to the phone lines. By the way, the phone number, so the local phone number is 314-454-0400. The long-distance number is 1-877-920-9468 or 1-877-920-WGNU. You can also hear me on the Internet at www.wgnu.net. And I'm going back to the phone lines. How you doing today, sir? Motorcycle man.
Yes, sir. Always a pleasure. You always bring up good topics. And one thing about it, everybody can tell that listens to you that you are very compassionate and sincere about your beliefs in a positive way. And I think that that's good because we need that.
I appreciate that.
A lot of times we have a tendency, and I guess it's just the nature of talk radio, that we talk about a lot of things that, in my opinion, are insignificant and are a waste of time when there's so many other things that are far more important: type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, the homeless, the way they're taking away Medicare, Medicaid, and reducing this benefits for poor people. And I just think there are a litany of other things, you know, education and a lot of stuff that you talk about, you know, and how if a person doesn't do for self and you don't have that self-determination and that will to try to improve yourself and get the proper education, then who truly can you blame other than yourself?
Well, again,
because the buck stops with the person.
I agree with that, and I agree with that to some degree, but I also agree that if there are entities in place that are designed to help you, if there's a business, for instance, that's supposed to do something in my home and they don't do it correctly, I want to deal with that business.
And I think you're right.
And that's what I'm saying. That was my contention about the federal government
You're right.
Okay.
What you're saying made all the sense in the world.
Okay.
I think that when they take your money by legal force, called Social Security and your taxes,
I agree.
And they treat you like a pimp does a prostitute, in my opinion, and just forcefully can take your house, and you, with the IRS, you're guilty till proven innocent, and the way the legal system more or less takes advantage of people, and then they put the money in the general revenue And every year they keep raising the age limit, hoping you die before you can collect Social Security.
Indeed.
So to me, that's just my personal pet peeve, that I don't think a person should have to pay Social Security. I think you should be able to opt out of it. And if you can show the government that you can manage your own money and you don't need them to play your dad and take your money and tell you that you're too stupid to manage money for when you get old.
I got to...
And then they say
but
not meant to be a retirement fund.
But see,
so
my
why
problem,
are you taking it if it's not meant to be a retirement fund?
My problem with that is that if you have individuals who take their money from Social Security and they screw it up, they are going to look to the government for assistance.
True.
And that's the way it has always been. Anytime anyone loses, even with these new bankruptcy laws, anytime anyone, specifically with businesses, anytime anyone loses their wherewithal, their livelihood, they look directly and immediately to the federal government for assistance. I think Social Security is a program that works. I think if they had, if they would keep their hands off of it and stop dipping into the fund, then Social Security would be self-sufficient. I don't think it would be a problem with the baby boomers if we hadn't had years and years of dipping into the fund itself.
Well, let me ask you this, since you seem to be more astute about it. Is it my impression, based upon my knowledge, they take your money and then they put it in the general revenue and spend it however they want, and then they leave IOUs or bonds or whatever you want to call it to where later down the road the government is supposed to take care of the money that they took. Now, to me, like you said, if they hadn't been dipping in it and taking the money all along and squandering it however they see fit, then we wouldn't be in this quagmire. But now the thing that I see is a lot of older people that are collecting it now, they're all for Social Security. Sure they are, because they're getting it. But my point is, it's working for the ones that are getting it now. But my point is, for the younger generation who may not get it and the money may not be there, that's my point. And then my biggest thing.
Well, again, you raise a good point there. And let me talk about that out there. And thanks for the call, man. I think that the misconception about Social Security is that you pay into Social Security and the money is there for you right away, or the money is held in some type of mechanism where it's there. When in actuality, people today are paying for Social Security for people in the future, because people in the past have paid for it for us. That's why there's such a problem with the baby boomers, because you had such a large number of them paying into Social Security, and that number of individuals is not available to pay into Social Security. Now, the reason the baby boomers are going to have so much trouble is because not only did they pay into Social Security, but there were so many different uses made of the Social Security fund. So that money is not going to be there. And then there aren't enough people paying into the system to be able to carry the baby boomers into the Social Security program. And thanks for the call. And let me move back to the phone lines. How you doing today, TC?
Hey, good morning, brother.
What's
Happy
up,
New
sir?
Year.
And
very,
to you.
Very, 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 very. Special surprise to hear you this morning.
I'm pleased to be here.
In regard to your last caller, Social Security is not the problem. It's one of the few. But it's one of the few federal programs that has worked.
Absolutely.
The problem is, and another thing, no one is stopping you saving money in the first place. Mm-hmm. So you can still save even with Social Security. And the problem is that the federal government, whether Republican or Democrat, if they were really sincere about saving money or helping the middle class or helping taxpayers, you would look at that federal income tax that they take out every week.
Yeah.
That's where they've done that. That's what they put the bite in you every week, that federal income tax that they take out. Now, if they really were serious, they would do something about that. I don't care whether they're Democrat
or
Republican.
And just to piggyback on that, the federal expenses, the expenses of the federal government are gargantuan. I mean, you have an extremely large amount of money that's just spent by the federal government. I'm talking salaries. I'm talking pension programs. I'm talking perks for congressmen. Those things, if we cut some of those things, if every congressman didn't get a raise every few years, we could save billions of dollars in those areas.
I understand that, but another thing, if they were serious, Democrat or Republican, cut some of these loopholes for big business.
They're not going
to. Cut some of these tax credits that General Motors can take their tax credit and sell it to Ford, or Boeing can take their tax credit and sell it to somebody else and make some money off of it. Now, it's a lot of waste to go around, but people seem like they always focus on And I understand, you understand what I'm talking about, the little people.
And it's easy.
Always focusing on people that don't have anything to begin with.
The reason that it's easier to focus on people that don't have anything to begin with is how do they fight back? You know, we don't have, there's not a forum for, and granted, if you talk about, say, the AARP or different organizations, yeah, they can get out and they can take some of these battles on, but eventually people have a tendency to look at groups of individuals, specifically groups of working class individuals, as nuisances, man. It's easy to attack people that are on Social Security or people that are on welfare or poor black people or poor white people because they can't fight back in the media.
But the difference is, with all that, it seems like the poor black people, at least it seems like they try to vote for folks who say they're going to try to do this or they're going to try to do that. We're not fooled by this Republican spin and this Republican line that goes on daily.
I would agree.
So that, you know, you can only do, I think we talked about this on the air, you can only do what you can do. A lot of folks say, well, they don't vote because they're going to steal your vote anyway.
Yeah.
Well, let them steal it.
Not only should you vote so that they can steal it, you should vote so that you make them have to steal it in public sight, in raw public view. You want them to steal your vote because you want to make sure that this system is being utilized as best it can be, and you want to be a part of it.
And I constantly hear that there's not a damn bit of difference between these two political parties. You got dogs in both parties. I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
But all you have to do is check the facts, check the record, check the platforms of these two political major parties, and you tell me there's not a difference. There's a difference, but it's up to you to find the difference between these two. You know, voters have a responsibility also.
Yeah.
You got to be informed of what's going on, and vote for who you think best, I guess, articulate
yeah.
problems or the priorities that you have. But there is a difference between these two political parties.
And I would absolutely agree. There is definitely a difference, and the problem is, just as you highlighted there, is that you if you vote for an individual who articulates your views and then he doesn't exhibit those articulations when he gets in office, then you vote for somebody else. But
if you tell me there was no difference between Bill Clay Sr. and Talent or Bond or Ashcroft, I would say you don't know what you're talking about. I would say you're completely out of your mind. If you said there wasn't no difference between Gene Carterhan and Bond or Ashcroft, I'd say you're out of your mind. If you said as bad as Clinton was, if you said there wasn't no difference between Clinton and this clown, this can of paint you got up there now, you don't know
yeah.
what you're talking about, man.
I would agree.
There is a difference between these two political parties.
There
man.
Is a difference. And again,
it's your responsibility as a voter to find out the facts and then vote accordingly.
All right.
As always, young brother, enjoy you. Take care of yourself.
You too, man. Thanks for the call. Absolutely. The voters are going to be the difference between these political candidates. Political candidates, as a rule, do exactly what the voters dictate that they do. Now, we can talk about these people being people of conscience and people of conviction, but they are governed by polls, and polls are dictated by the people. This is a simple process, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Keith Gray. I'm sitting in for Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call, and I'll be right back after this traffic and commercial break.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline Damascus. The Vice President of Syria has tendered his resignation. Abdel Halim Kadam says the current regime in Syria was behind the murder of Lebanese Premier Rafiq Hariri. According to Kadam, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad made a threat toward Hariri a few months before he died in a bomb blast on February 14th. The vice president says his boss told Hariri that he would destroy anyone who tried to hinder Syrian decisions. Kadam is also pointing the finger at Lebanese President Emil Hahoud and other officials for helping to stoke hatred against Hariri. A UN panel looking into the assassination says that there is evidence that Syrian intelligence had a hand in the death. Kaddam's outspokenness in this matter lays the case that there is serious fracturing of the Syrian government. Earlier this year, he'd also criticized foreign policy that led up to the withdrawal of troops from Lebanon. Kaddam has now moved to France, where he says he's writing a book. And Dateline Washington. The Transportation Security Administration is going to adopt a new tactic to check out passengers. The TSA will have their screeners engage travelers in small talk to get a feel as to whether the person might be nervous or evasive and subsequently require further scrutinizing. The TSA thinks body language can be a clue as to terrorist activity. The American Civil Liberties Union says using such a technique leads to racial profiling and has already filed a lawsuit to stop such a screening program at Logan Airport in Boston, which began the program as a test back in 2002. About 40 airports are expected to put this type of surveillance in place this year. This is your wake-up call global news update.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
I know someone with lupus.
My girlfriend.
My mommy.
We work together.
My sister.
My neighbor.
I know someone with lupus. She's so tired.
Fatigue, achy joints, and fever.
Severe chest pains, heart problems.
Her kidneys gave up.
He had a seizure.
Pain never stops.
Someone you know.
Someone you know.
Someone you know.
Someone you know has lupus.
But there is hope. For information, contact the Lupus Foundation of America at 888-38-LUPUS or lupus.org.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle, Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics, to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Has Steve Franklin been on your mind? Join him online at WGNU.net.
All right, welcome back, WGNU listeners. This is Keith Gray, sitting in on the morning wake-up call for Liz Brown on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. The phone numbers to dial are 314-454-0400 for local listeners, and for long-distance callers, it's 1-877-920-9468 or 1-877-920-WGNU. You can also hear me on the internet at www.wgnu.net. I am going to go back to the phone lines and talk to, how you doing today, Arthur?
Yeah, good morning, Keith. Good morning.
How you doing, sir?
All right. I enjoy any time you're on the radio. You talk about a lot of good issues.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, the other week, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, right before the holiday, the top of the hour news for about 2 days, it went on for about 2 days. They talked about they found DNA evidence that man originated in Africa. Do you hear anything about that?
I hadn't heard anything recently, but I've heard that a number of times in the past.
Now, this was recent.
Okay.
They found DNA evidence, and they made a statement that the Caucasian race was a mutant race, and that in no way pointed to any superiority of the races. But this was on the top of the hour news for like a day and a half.
Well, it's not I won't say that it's not surprising, but the simple fact of the matter is, if you've studied my undergraduate degree was biological science. If you've studied genetics, you know the origins of people and the origins of like traits, like brown eyes are dominant trait, blue eyes are a recessive, kinky hair is dominant. Straight hair is recessive, dark hair is dominant, blonde hair is recessive. I mean, if you study basic genetics, you kind of have an idea where this stuff comes from and the origins of people. I mean, and these are scientific laws. These are things that don't change and they're irrefutable. So I mean, I'm not surprised that this information was found.
Explain some of the atrocities that happened all throughout history?
No, I think atrocities can be only attributed to people, man. I don't think it's got much to do with genetics or science. I think we're giving people too much credit. I think it's basically just character flaws in individuals and character flaws in groups. You know, it only takes one individual to start a snowball rolling down a hill, and I think that's what a lot of this is. I don't think it's because, I mean, if we make that assertion, if we make the assertion that it's based on some type of science, then we have to attribute negative qualities to a group of people. We have to say either all white people are bad or all black people are good, and frankly speaking, man, the simple fact of the matter is it's not true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I appreciate that.
Right.
What I should have said was, I guess the ones that follow those ideologies, the ones that say that, you know, that certain features or the chosen features,
sure,
what they put up in advertising and everything.
I think that's when you get back to your individualities, and as a matter of fact, it goes back to like when you look at, say, advertisement and people that put up advertisements. There was a standard of beauty, specifically in America. There was a standard of beauty that said, you know, thin with blonde hair and blue eyes was the only beauty for a period of time. And as African-American people, we actually accepted that to some degree. We straightened our hair, and you had people running around with blue or green contact lenses and narrowing their noses and lightening their skin. But that stuff doesn't exist anymore, man. We realize and we understand that we are a beautiful people, man. And we have always been a beautiful people. We didn't necessarily need someone to tell us, but we just needed to acknowledge it ourselves.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. We'll hold you up.
I appreciate the call. Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How you doing today, Mary?
Hello. Hi, Keith.
How are you, ma'am? Yes, ma'am.
I want to say hi to Liz Brown. I enjoy her show. The reason I'm calling, well, Happy New Year to everyone.
All right.
The reason I'm calling, I've been listening to all you guys, and I guess well, my thing with this is, as we as black people, okay, first, what is your topic for today? Let me make sure.
I really didn't have one. It's just general topics, ma'am. Anything you want to talk about, let's roll with it.
Okay, so I guess what I'm thinking, like, okay, you mentioned Katrina earlier.
Yes.
You were saying, like,
I always mention Katrina.
Wait, that's good, because you were saying how you don't hear too much in the news and all this, and what's happening to the people going to be leaving now in February. I guess what I'm saying is, we as black people, it's like we keep waiting on the white man to do something. It's like we know what their agenda is, to take care of their own. It's like we need to, like, to me, when Katrina happened.
Hang on one second. By no means am I saying that I'm waiting on the white man to come, but we have an entity in this country called the federal government that responds when there are natural disasters. They responded in Florida when there was a natural disaster. As a matter of fact, they responded in Sri Lanka when there was a natural disaster. So if there is a natural disaster within the confines of the United States, and just because it has black people involved in it, the federal government still should respond to that. That's what I'm talking about.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Our history, we know it's not going to happen. And so therefore, us knowing that it should be that way and it's not going to happen, our plan B and plan C should be like, you know, it should be some black boys pulling out in a helicopter, getting out that water.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see not one black helicopter nowhere. And so where's our plan B if the white man don't come through?
Again, here it is, though. I can kind of appreciate what you're saying there, but the simple fact is, If we accept the premise that we know it's not going to happen, then we can rest assured of one thing in this scenario, Mary, is that it's not going to happen. If we stop talking about it, if we say, well, they're not going to do anything. I mean, you've been in this position, I'm sure, before,
mm-hmm.
where you were talking to somebody and you expected the worst. When you expect the worst, you get the worst.
No, I expect to see on TV someone saying, look at the black soldiers. They got their own helicopters. You know what I'm saying?
Well, for that to happen.
I'm expecting the good part of this.
I understand that, but for that to happen.
We need our plan. But like, now, you should be mentioning about the committees happening to make sure this don't happen again. I don't hear any committees going on. I went to the Millions More Movement in Washington, D.C.
But that's why.
They had an agenda.
But hang on,
like,
hang on.
The committees are going to make sure.
Hang on, Mary. That's why you have African-American politicians. That's why you go to the poll as a black person. It would be one thing if we had a separate nation within the United States with a black army, and we don't. It's just not the case. But by the same token, what we do have is we have a federal government. We have an American system that we are part of. And that's something that we need to acknowledge. And I'm going to bring you back, Mary. It's something that we need to acknowledge. We need to acknowledge that this is our system, too.
Look, we didn't expect it for 400 years, honey. It's time for us to do something different.
No, I understand that. But this is the one, Keith.
We start committees. I mean, we can start in St. Louis, Chicago, New York, San Francisco. I mean, we can do a regional. Well, it's time for us to do something for the
120.
You see, a fairway with their deadline.
I understand.
What's going to happen to them when fairway would be here?
And
do we have a plan? What's going to happen to them?
You know what? I actually do like that idea because the and thanks for the call, Mary, because the February deadline is approaching. So, absolutely, there needs to be something in place, but if the federal government sees something in place, would that help? Would that hamper their actions? I'm not sure. That's a good point, Mary, and thanks for the call. And call me back. I'm usually on 1 to 2. This is Keith Gray sitting in for Liz Brown on Radio Free St. Louis AM 920, the morning wake up call. I'll be right back after this top of the hour news break.
Soldiers, keep on.
On your AM dial, WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Michael Barr. Fire and rain can both be destructive. Flooding in Northern California from heavy rains is worse than expected. At least 2 people have been killed from the storms, and 130,000 people are without power in California. Brian McCarthy lives in Forestville.
We lost all of our clothes and everything, so we're not too sure what we can do. We should hear something by the end of the week, if I could get my Social Security check. And all the banks have been closed and stuff like that, so it's hard to even get the money.
Wildfires have scorched tens of thousands of acres in Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. ABC Steve Olson-Salming in Oklahoma City says officials can't keep up with the flames.
Firefighters, mostly volunteers, are stretched thin. High winds have fanned the flames, and authorities have not been able to keep up. For many families, their only defense, a garden hose.
President Bush is getting ready for his State of the Union speech later this month. Mr. Bush has been dogged by questions about Iraq, domestic spying, and Hurricane Katrina. ABC's chief Washington correspondent, George Stephanopoulos.
Leading up to that State of the Union, he wants people to understand that he believes we're making progress in Iraq and progress on the economy.
Doctors in Atlanta say an Iraqi infant awaiting surgery to correct severe birth defects is active and playful. 3-month-old baby Noor al-Zarar has spina bifida. The baby, her father, and grandmother left Baghdad Friday in a military transport plane. U.S. troops discovered the child 3 weeks ago during a raid. Dr. Roger Hudgens is with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta on ABC's Good Morning America.
She's will probably be in a wheelchair, but at this point she also seems to have normal mental function. She smiles, she's interactive and playful, so we have very high hopes for her.
Authorities in Baltimore are looking for a man who robbed worshipers at gunpoint during Sunday evening services at a church. This is ABC News.
This year, I made resolutions I can actually keep. Like, I resolved not to climb Mount Everest and not to write the great American novel. It's so simple, it can't fail. I also resolved to have a nutritious breakfast every day.
Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added has twice the calcium of yogurt, twice the protein of an egg, and only 150 calories.
And I drink it in the morning and still have plenty of time to not train for a marathon.
Nestle Carnation Instant Breakfast with no sugar added is serious morning fuel.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
Here they are, all the way from Liverpool.
There are thousands marching on Washington as...
A generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477. Ameriprise Financial Services, number NASD and SIPC.
The Tournament of Roses parade begins in just over an hour in Pasadena. Parade goers will have to dodge raindrops. It hasn't rained at the parade in 51 years. Are you ready for some college football? Six bowl games are on tap today, including the Fiesta Bowl on ABC. Other games today include the Cotton Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. There are clues to what the sequel to Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code will be about. ABC's Aaron Katursky explains.
Think you're as smart as fictional symbologist Robert Langdon? Dan Brown has posted a web quest on his homepage that challenges readers to decipher clues about the theme of his next book, The Solomon Key. It's not even finished yet, but fans believe the Freemasons, the CIA, and Mormons will somehow figure into the novel's plot. Disguised on the dust jacket of the Da Vinci Code, the web quest says, are numerous encrypted messages that hint at the subject matter of Brown's next novel. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Michael Barr, ABC News.
With a report of WGNU News, I'm Peyton Colston. This update is brought to you by Comtrax. In our news at this hour, a petition to recall St. Louis City Alderman Jeffrey Boyd is being thrown out due to fraudulent signatures. St. Louis City Board of Election Commissioners Chairman Ed Martin says some of the signatures were those of deceased people. Martin says he's deeply offended that this happened.
We cannot accept a system where these kinds of fraudulent activities go on and expect to look the people of the city of St. Louis in the face and say we're protecting the integrity of your voting system.
Former Alderman Kenny Jones and Jay Ozier requested the recall of Alderman Boyd, but city officials have declined to say who they think is responsible for the fraudulent signatures. Martin does say whoever's responsible could face jail time. In other news, a Bell Ridge toddler is safe, but her father remains at large after allegedly kidnapping the girl yesterday. An SARAA alert was issued yesterday morning for 19-month-old Nasha Donovan after police claim her father, 19-year-old Michael Donovan, entered her mother's apartment and took the girl from bed. Nasha was found 12 hours later in a vehicle on New Halls Ferry Road and is reported to be in good condition. Michael Donovan remains at large and is said to possibly be driving a 1995 Pontiac Grand Am with Missouri license plate 098YEZ. Police are investigating the death of a 23-year-old Lincoln County woman at an Earth City hotel. The woman was staying at the Sheraton Four Points Hotel with a boyfriend Saturday night. She was dead by the time an ambulance arrived at the hotel around 4 yesterday morning. The case is not being considered a homicide at this point. Investigators are awaiting the results of an autopsy and toxicology tests. The woman's name has not been released. And finally, about 40 families will have to find new homes while others are awaiting the go-ahead to return to their apartments after a weekend fire. The cause of Saturday's fire at a senior apartment complex in the 1400 block of Ohio is still under investigation. Officials say about one-third of the Lafayette Affordable Housing Complex was destroyed. And that's a report of WGNU News brought to you by Comtrex. Comtrex Deep Chest Cold has an ingredient specifically designed to break up stubborn chest congestion and relieve sore throats and coughing. Comtrex knocks out every kind of cold symptom. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Granite Works. Northbound 270 between Olive and Pages, an accident left lane is blocked. Northbound 55 from 270 Holly Hills, no problems there. Eastbound 44 from Merrimack River Bridge to Shrewsbury is lighter than normal. Eastbound 40 from Boone Bridge to Clayton Morrison looks good. Northbound 270 from the 55 all the way into Manchester looks good. Westbound 5570 from Tudor to the Poplar Street Bridge is looking good. Westbound 64 between the Ball Avenue and PSB looks for lighter than normal traffic. Page of Walton, the traffic lights are not working. They're on red flash. Westbound Natural Bridge at Springdale looks for road construction. Right lane is closed. Northbound Illinois Route 3 at 15 look for intermittent daytime closures for road construction from Rogers Drive all the way to the 1315 split. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by Granite Works. Granite Works just got a new shipment of beautiful granite, exotic new colors from Brazil like jade green at very affordable prices, as little as $38 a square foot. Visit today or call 862-6300. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Wednesday for today. Breezy, mostly cloudy, a chance of showers, high in mid-50s. Mostly cloudy, colder, and low in mid-30s this evening. For Tuesday, partly sunny, high in the upper 40s. Tuesday evening, partly cloudy in the evening, becoming mostly cloudy overnight with a low in the upper 30s. Then on Wednesday, mostly cloudy once again with a chance for rain. The high should be in the upper 40s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 54 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 55, both under partly cloudy skies. Liz Brown will be live in the studio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., but for this hour, we have Keith Gray, and he's doing just a fantastic job. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, WGNU listeners. This is Keith Gray, sitting in for Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU. Mary, the last caller before the break, I think you made a very good point, and I like the concept of taking some initiative in that matter. And I guess my only caveat about that situation is that I think that is a discussion for after the meeting. And if you've heard me before, that there are things that you discuss on the air, and I think that's a meeting after the meeting discussion. But I think it's definitely one that should be broached by the community. Make sure you call back. I'm normally on from 1 to 2 p.m. I am not Liz Brown, so I won't be on in the mornings very frequently, but I love the opportunity to sit in because I love the tenor of Ms. Brown's audience. I'm going back to the phone lines. The number to dial is 314-454-0400 for local callers. For long-distance callers, it's 1-877-920-9468 or 1-877-920-WGNU. You can also hear me on the Internet at www.wgnu.net. Let's go back to the phone lines. How are you today, Martha?
Good morning. How are you doing, Keith?
I'm great, ma'am.
Well, you're at 1 to 2 what days?
1 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Oh, very, very good.
Thank you.
I also hope you have a very good year, and I wish, my wish for this year for my community.
Yes, ma'am.
To be more vigilant and kind to each other and good manners, and also to stop abusing the children, physical or verbal abuse.
I like it.
Take a more interest in our school system. Go down to the schools. When you have time, I take some time and go down there and see what the children are doing, because the teachers, they really need some help.
I agree.
Really need some help. And also, to let's clean up our community with all this trash. You know, we have the dumpsters. We have brooms. Let's clean it up, because in our areas, it is too much trash. And I think we can do something about that.
All right.
And stop sending the little kids out with all these big bags. They cannot open that dumpster top.
Mm-hmm.
Adults have to do this. So adults, we're going to have to do more. And the men, you're going to have to help the women and children clean up. Help us out.
Right.
Also, I'm looking for my Tennessee State alumni.
Okay.
We need you because the scholarship money is decreasing all over.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to help the kids to go to Tennessee State.
All right.
If you know of anyone, tell them to contact me.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Thank you, Martha.
All right. And have a good year and keep on talking.
I'm going to do my best. Thanks all a lot,
right.
Martha.
Bye-bye.
All right. How you doing today, Thomas?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, sir. What's
going
on?
Yeah, I've been great. I've been listening to you. You are one of my peoples.
Yes, sir.
That I really listen to. I got quite a few of them. And I like to give them and you, because they have to be black, because there's no way white people are going to do this, because they didn't do it in the first place.
Okay.
Is to go back to the beginning. And I tell you, read Wilder's, I think it's, I got his name here, book by Anthony Barner.
Okay.
And go to page 123 in the book on civilization. It's Nivellic Constitution to Civilization.
Okay.
And then go to Walter Williams, book on the origin of civilization. And that's on page 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And then you will see the peoples who are running this world now will never solve the problem, because the way they solve the problem, when they solve one problem, they create another one. And that's a universal law. We got to go back to the beginning, and then that'll stop all the things we're doing now. But you, Liz Brown, and Mr. Hagin and few of them, boy, are really on the ball. And I really appreciate you, and I'll always be glad for you and you come on between 1 and 2.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call,
You
Thomas.
Have a nice night.
You too.
I mean day. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you too, man. Take
Bye-bye.
It easy. All right. Big T.
How you doing?
I'm good, sir.
The previous caller just reminded me of something I needed to say right quick.
Go ahead.
Before I go to what I really called about. There was a host that's on here at 4 o'clock that made the statement that he didn't understand why there were people celebrating a certain holiday in Ethiopia because there were no Christians there. And that person doesn't even know that Christian worship has a long history in Ethiopia. Actually, that is where people say that the Ark of the Covenant is being kept.
Okay.
It's in Ethiopia. So, okay. It just amazes me how people make statements, and they don't know what they're talking about.
Okay. What did you call about, man? And let's move on. What did you call about?
I heard you talking about this Social Security thing.
Yes, sir.
This is such an easy problem to solve. It's not I don't even consider it being a problem. The mass wealth that this country can accumulate in one sitting. Let's say you take 100 million people in this country and each of them give $5. That's $500 million right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
How you fix this system is you come up with a parallel system. A private parallel system that's government regulated so that the government can control it but not be able to dip into it. It would be a privately managed company. And what you do is...
I guess that's my question. That would be my first question. Who would you get to manage it? Because and let me preface that by saying if you get Republicans to manage it, how is that? excuse me. How is that going to affect the system? If you get Democrats to management, how is that going to manage it? How does that affect the system?
This wouldn't be managed by a party. This would be just like a private, kind of like a 401k type of situation almost. I would say it would be something a little bit better than that. It would be regulated by the government to make sure that it stays on the up and up. But it would be. Some private company that could put a bid on it, it would manage this fund.
I guess.
And it would be a parallel fund. You would not mess with the existing situation as it works now. You don't. That's stupid to do that. You don't do that in industry. When you get ready to come up with a new system, you always come up with that system, test it, and get ready to put it into service before you take out the old system.
Sure.
So, you know, you run this parallel system, and you run it just like people in this country live off of interest income, that are wealthy people that are independently wealthy, and they live off interest income. They don't have to work.
Mm-hmm.
It's the big balance theory. The bigger your balance, the more interest you earn off of it. So, you know, if you create a big enough balance, the interest alone would help you sustain that system. And you run it parallel to the existing system now, and as that system is able to support itself, then you start to phase the other system out.
I like the idea in theory, but there are so many potential problems with it, because there are so many opportunities for partisanship to become a part of a system like that. Who do you appoint to govern it? Who governs that entity?
Private.
How does it, again, even if it's a private entity, I mean, look at, for instance, let's say we get a private entity, say someone like Halliburton. If we get, you know, somebody like that to govern it, who governs that system, and then how are they influenced? I think Social Security at this point, and I like the idea of building redundancy into a system. You put something in place so that the Social Security system can still operate, and then when this system shows that it's effective, then that system can be implemented and Social Security can be phased out. I like that idea, but the system that you're talking about is just way too fraught with opportunities for individuals to get in there, influence that system, and then basically do the same thing they're talking about doing when they were talking about getting rid of Social Security
and putting
it in private hands.
There are systems that work right now that are run basically that same way. You can look at maybe like your public utilities.
Sure.
They are regulated by the government, maybe state governments. You could have it where it's regulated by each state.
But public utilities are historically known for not being favorable for the individuals that they're supposed to be. Because, first of all, they're monopolies. But more importantly, they are monopolies that are governed by entities that are put in place by politicians, by partisan politics. And what happens basically is that when, for instance, let's look at the Public Service Commission here in Missouri, the St. Louis that governs UE and General Laclede Gas. Virtually every time one of those entities goes for a rate increase, they get it from the Public Service Commission that is supposed to be looking out for our best interest. When UE had that Callaway nuclear plant thing that they needed to get paid for, they went to the Public Service Commission, and that thing is being paid for with public monies. So what I'm saying is, when those entities are put in place, they are put in place by politicians. And
is it possible to have a situation where each state could vote on a representative that would be a person that would oversee this program?
Again, once you put it into the voting process, then it really has the opportunity to be fraught.
I mean, having a regular public vote for it.
Well, let's look at it this way. We've got congressmen who have been in Congress. We have senators who've been in office for 20 or 30 years, who have had all types of scandals, have had all types of problems, and yet they get reelected term after term after term. The reason that is because once you become an incumbent, it's very easy for you to raise money to get reelected. And that's the problem with the political system in general. The one thing, the primary problem is that it's for sale. That's why you have lobbyists who are making literally millions of dollars and who control billions of dollars, and they're getting politicians to do exactly what they want them to do.
But couldn't you keep this out of the government? I mean, if you have the people elect these people, they wouldn't be going to like a political office. They'd be like almost like a subdivision electing trustees.
For your system to work, I think it would take someone with an ungodly amount of money, somebody like Bill Gates, to put something in place and for Bill Gates to govern it, and for Bill Gates to say, this is how we do it. It wouldn't work if anyone else, and again, he would have to have the best intentions for the people of the United States at heart, because once he got any type of treachery in his heart, once he got any type of dastardly idea, that system would be a problem again. So it would take someone who was, I think it would take one entity. I don't think, once you start dealing with government, you have too much opportunity for influence to become a problem.
Well, do you agree with me that physically the problem is easy to solve, you know, as far as monetary?
I agree with you that ideally the problem is easy to solve. Now, physically is an entirely different. Ideally, if we could put the system that you're talking about in place with the idea and with the responses that we would expect to come from it to occur. Yeah, I think it's a perfect idea. But then again, I can't look at it ideally because we don't live in an ideal world.
That's good. Well, maybe ask some of the other callers, see what they think.
All right. Thanks for the call, man.
All right.
All right. XX Peter.
How you doing, Keith?
I'm great, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. You know, on that Social Security issue.
Yes, sir.
Something's going to have to be done than what's being done now.
I agree.
I think that some individuals would be capable of managing their own, but the majority of individuals would not be.
Right.
And the way many pension systems are structured, you know, I'm familiar with some of the pension structures that's dealing with the construction industry.
Mm-hmm.
Those have been managed very well, and they pay off very handsomely.
Yeah.
I've seen people retire.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay.
I've seen people retire and actually earn more retired than they did when they was working. But they pay in much more than the 7.5% matched by 7.5%, 15%
right,
that you see them being paid in
right
with the current employee.
That's another element of Social Security that most people don't acknowledge, the fact that there is government matching funds.
Well, it's not government matching funds, it's employee.
Okay, employer matching funds. It was government mandated employer matching funds. But what I'm saying there is, if you manage your own Social Security funds, if you had to manage that, I don't know whether they would make I don't know whether they could mandate that the employers match your funds.
Yeah,
because you're controlling it yourself.
That would be something different too.
Yeah.
But you know, I want to talk about also, you've been keeping up with the baby, the story about the infant that was brought from Baghdad to the United States to receive the medical attention.
Only in a cursory fashion. Not really.
Well, you know, I don't have anything wrong with that, but this has really been played up into a political ploy, I guess you can say, yeah. A news spin, whereas it's showing the attitude, not the attitude, but the benevolence of this country,
mm-hmm,
in bringing this child all the way from Iraq here to the United States. But you know, the thing that comes to mind to me is that when during Katrina, when Cuba wanted to send 1,200 doctors to New Orleans in order to provide their expertise in that particular situation that was going on, and it actually could have saved lives,
yeah,
because of the government's policy towards Cuba, and I believe also because of a lot of the people who were the impact,
yeah,
it wasn't allowed to happen.
Yeah, and that's something that, again, is not widely known or is not widely disseminated to the public. I mean, that's something, that was a story that died pretty quickly.
Yeah, it did. It went down real fast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, man.
Bye-bye.
All right. How are you doing today, Mrs. Smith?
Hello there. I'm so happy to know you're so well-read. I thoroughly enjoy when you're on.
Thank you, ma'am.
And my one thing I was thinking about this morning is I heard on radio or television that the ALCIO was going to give cameras and video tech to North St. Louis citizens. Did you hear that?
No.
Oh, yes.
What are we talking about?
They are to document when the police is using brutality against people. Now, I'm wondering about this. Is this to set the police and the citizens of North St. Louis against each other? I mean, or is it that much brutality going on?
Well,
are they that interested? That's what I want to know.
And honestly, this is the first that,
okay,
I've heard of the situation.
Okay,
but,
well, then I won't go in, but it's well spread right now.
Okay, well, just to address that briefly, I think that the citizens in North St. Louis and the police already have something of a contentious relationship.
Okay.
Yeah. But as far as the AFL-CIO, I couldn't even begin to understand or address what their motives are. I can't begin to understand what their motives would be.
Okay. Now, the other one thing I wanted to mention is this young boy named Ferris that just came back from Baghdad.
Yeah.
Now, this is really crazy as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
I'm just a normal citizen. Now, if they're so concerned, okay, you are scrutinized and you're taping people and your conversations, you're doing all this. Now, his parents are from Iraq. They
mm-hmm.
were born there
mm-hmm.
and came here. Okay, so they keep saying he's an American citizen,
they,
of course.
And they stress that.
Yes, they keep expressing that. Now, he got all the way over there with no kind of problem
mm-hmm.
whatsoever flying.
Yes,
okay,
ma'am.
Suppose this is somebody that's taking secrets or something. This is not making any sense. And Americans are eating it up.
I know, and it's this kid is going to be a star.
Oh, sure. He's going to write
gonna
a book. They're going to make a movie.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, and I hate to name people, but white Americans are... I would say they're strange people.
Well, again, this will be a movie.
I know.
And he flew. He didn't fly to Iraq. He flew to Kuwait, but
uh-huh.
he ended up literally on the streets of Iraq.
Uh huh.
This is a problem. And then now you're telling me that they can have people under surveillance for 4 years,
uh-huh.
but you can't dictate a kid. You can't understand or you can't follow or keep up with a kid.
That
16-year-old kid.
Old?
That takes a plane to Kuwait and ends up on the streets of Iraq talking to U.S. soldiers, and he ended up, I believe, at the U.S. embassy.
Yes,
some
he
kind
did.
Of way.
At
the news. It was either Newsweek or Associated Press offices.
Yes, and didn't they say that the army or whatever spent money flying
mm-hmm.
him back?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, if he flew over there, why couldn't he fly himself back?
Well,
his mother said he had his own money, his own passport,
mm-hmm.
and they're living in $1 million home.
They said he had.
Only a millionaire could do that.
Yes, ma'am. And only a millionaire could get away with it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, but America
mm-hmm.
people, they're just eating this up.
Yeah.
It's just so funny and so cute. It's not cute at all.
And I'm trying to figure out why this isn't being dealt with in a more
serious.
And negative.
Yes.
Negative fashion.
But that's not what they're about here.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Smith.
Bye-bye.
All right. How you doing today, sir? Hello.
Hello.
How you doing, sir?
All right. Yes, I'd like to know, when did we adopt a Nazi Star helmet? I was in Vietnam in the Tonkin Gulf.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw them, I said, I think all hell's going to break loose.
Okay, I'm not sure.
You know who is responsible for that? I think it was Secretary of Defense Baker.
Okay. I'm not certain. And it's something that I couldn't even address at this point.
All right.
Yeah, but thanks for your call, sir.
Okay.
How you doing today, Roosevelt man?
Well, the same to you, Keith. You know, Charles Lindbergh, it just came out, he had a wife and children in Nazi Germany. He was a bigamist. He was had a family here and in Germany. So that would explain why he was so adamantly against World War II, I guess.
Okay.
But, Keith, I saw the head of FEMA. Now, this may have been last Friday, maybe, on the morning news. And this man openly stated, the current head, he said, if we had right now anything near a second Katrina, this agency would collapse. That is his verbatim words. This means... You know, the president's protection and taking care of the country, and you have the head guy at FEMA saying, we couldn't handle one more city. It would be a total collapse. We have no money or manpower. And so, Keith, I say to you, as you probably think anyway, the president's protection and... his protection and 50 cents will buy the Daily Post.
There you go.
And let me just say this in closing. The governor throws off 150,000 Americans, Missourians, and they bring in this young man from Iraq. So I guess it's the case of the shoe cobbler's kids going barefoot, or you're feeding your next-door neighbor while your own children are starving.
There you go.
Thank you very much, Keith, and Happy New Year to you.
You too, man. On that note, my name is Keith Gray. This is the Morning Wake Up Call. I'm sitting in for Liz Brown. I will be right back after this traffic and commercial break.
Lonely one of young, so broken hearted, traveling down the rigid road of life, using pharmaceutical extractions to find the paradise.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I didn't feel sick, so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49.
Most people with diabetes also have high blood pressure and cholesterol, which can cause severe heart damage. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. Call 1-800-DIABETES for your free diabetes survival guide. Choose to live.
Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes, and after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I had the knowledge, and most importantly, the discipline to make conscious, healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger with a personal invitation for you to join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on WGNU. It is so great to be back in the St. Louis area, and I'm looking forward to talking with you here at Radio Free St. Louis about your personal, work, and family problems and issues. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, that's 1-800-DR-LAURA, and let's take on the day. Join me, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, 2 to 4 Monday through Friday afternoons on Radio Free St. Louis. AM 920 WGNU.
Do you receive Medicare and take prescription drugs? Beginning January 2006, Medicare will provide much-needed drug coverage. Regardless of income, seniors will finally have an affordable plan for medicines. Enrollment begins November 15th. Understand your options so you can make an informed choice. For more information, call 1-800-MEDICARE or visit www.medicare.gov. This message is brought to you by the Visiting Nurse Associations of America and your local VNA.
Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU.
Not much more time to decide.
Welcome back, WGNU listeners. This is Keith Gray sitting in for Liz Brown on the Morning Wake Up Call on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920, WGNU. The local number to talk on the radio is 314-454-0400. The long-distance number is 1-877-920-9468 or 1-877-920-WGNU. You can also hear me on the Internet at www.wgnu.net. Following this program at 10 a.m., Kathleen Schweitzer will be in place from 10 to noon. From 12 to 1, Stanford Karp will be in with The World According to Karp. From 1 p.m. it's to be announced. 1 to 2 p.m. it's to be announced. That's normally my time. I won't be here. And then from 2 to 4 p.m., Dr. Laura Schlesinger will take on the day. Let's go back to the phone lines and talk to, how are you today, George?
How are you doing, Mr. Gray?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine.
All right. What's going on?
Happy New Year, too.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said Happy New Year.
And to you.
Hey, I can't understand why these people cannot see through this man, this Bush. This guy is nothing but a criminal. I mean, here he is yesterday defending wiretapping. That's what got Nixon impeached.
Yes,
he was wiretapping the opposition's party.
Yes, sir.
And authorized it like he was above the law, like he was able to do that.
And he wasn't doing it for 4 years. He wasn't doing it. I mean, 4 years is a long time to not go and get a warrant from a judge. That's a long, long time.
They're the ones that his father and him are always talking about rule of law and all this, but then they violate it.
They regularly wrap themselves in the Constitution and then they step on it when it's convenient.
Yeah, they wrap themselves in the flag like they're so. This stuff does not go on. That is not the American way.
No, sir.
This stuff goes on in places like Russia and Mexico. I tell you what, I'm not talking to Al Qaeda, but I don't want anybody listening on my phone. That's private between me and whoever I'm talking to, and I don't want anybody listening to my conversation.
I agree.
And that's the law that nobody's supposed to infringe on my personal rights. And to say that it's all for protecting American people, it's just nothing but a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, then they turn around and play. Then they turn the tables and try to blame it on the reporter for leaking the story.
Exactly. And I think that's something that we all need to focus on, is the fact that they're trying to take the attention away from the act and bring the attention to the individual who brought the act to light. And I think it was Charles Schumer this weekend who made the distinction that if this act is illegal, then the person who told or who brought the attention to the act is not a terrorist, but is a patriot and a whistleblower. And
that's
whistleblower,
right. I agree. Whoever leaked the story was a patriot and was an American and leaked the criminal activities of the Bush administration. If you remember, they were paying this Walter Williams to promote their No Child Left Behind. They were caught doing that.
Yes,
they
sir.
Were caught with that Valerie Flame, the Joseph Wilson. They leaked her name because he spoke out against this war.
Yes, sir.
These people are criminals.
It's becoming a pattern. It's commit an act. Stand up and claim that you're doing it for the country, and then accuse. And they've been getting out of it using that pattern.
And then to say to pass this Patriot Act, which is anything but what a patriot would do, that'll strip you of your rights and lets the FBI go right into your house without any kind of search warrant. They can take anything they want, do anything they want, and then you can't even tell them that they've even been there. I mean, this stuff is crazy. It's Soviet Russia, and it's just a fraud. And they just keep pleading this Al Qaeda like Al Qaeda's everywhere.
Yes, sir.
They're trying to create fear among the people. And Al Qaeda, they don't have any army. They have no navy. They have nothing.
And again, it's convenient to use. Al Qaeda is basically becoming the boogeyman. They use Al Qaeda virtually every time something goes wrong. Anytime they want to justify an action that is a wrong action, they justify it by saying we were doing it to protect you from Al Qaeda, and they're doing it much too frequently for it to be an appropriate justification.
Because they want to take your rights away, and if people can't understand it, they want to get it where they can just do anything they want. This is not about a war on terror. This is about people in power wanting to dominate everybody and control people.
This is becoming, and your opinion is becoming, a much more prevalent opinion. I want to thank you for your call, man.
Okay, thank you.
How you doing today, Scott?
I'm doing good. ex-Peter made a good point about the corporate media. And the corporate media has also ignored, according to Snopes.com, mm-hmm. which is a website that investigates rumors and urban legends.
Okay.
Cindy Sheehan did raise her son Casey, who was killed in Iraq, and I guess the rumor that she didn't raise him got started because on Bill O'Reilly his viewers got the Sheehan family confused with the Kesterton family.
Again, I'm trying to understand the relevance of that. It's amazing to me how they can bring to light individual ideas and individual thoughts that really have nothing to do with the topics that are being discussed, but they have some type of disparaging nature to the individuals that they're trying to discredit. And those things are becoming the Bush administration. And again, I attribute all these acts to Karl Rove. The Bush administration and Karl Rove have an uncanny ability of being able to redirect the focus of the American people. And that's what they're trying to do with this situation, with this surveillance. surveillance. It wasn't the fact that they were that they had people under surveillance for 4 years. The problem here, the real problem, according to them, is that someone leaked the information.
Yeah, well, and that guy made a good point, is that the information that was leaked had to do with an illegal activity,
exactly.
Whereas the information that was leaked by Karl Rove and Louis Libby was not an illegal activity.
No.
There was nothing illegal about it.
It was actually malicious. It was designed to cause someone who was in opposition to them harm.
But I wonder if that means now that Bush isn't going to comment on that issue, because he said he wasn't going to comment on the Karl Rove thing. So I guess now he can't comment on the wiretap thing anymore.
Well,
since
he's already commented on it this weekend.
Certain things it is okay to comment when there's an investigation.
Oh, well, the thing about it is that 99% of the time when he comments on something, he's usually commenting from a stance of taking a posture of we did the right thing. and it's again, these things are becoming so prevalent that it's almost like a TV program that you've seen before. You know what's coming.
Now, I don't know. I doubt very seriously of Bill O'Reilly, because, I mean, this rumor has been all over the Internet and the radio about Cindy Sheehan. I'm sure Bill O'Reilly knows about it. And, you know, he should come on the air and say, look, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cause confusion there.
And the odds of that happening, and that's why I refer to Fox News as Fox Entertainment, because it's not
news. Nobody in the corporate media has mentioned this. I mean, everybody knows that this rumor's out there, but CNN and ABC and I'm sure none of them have corrected the rumor.
Well, Fox has a built-in audience of individuals who believe that George Bush, regardless of what he does, whether it be right or wrong, can do no wrong.
Yeah, even if he nukes somebody.
He cannot do wrong.
He can't do wrong. They'll come up, well, Truman nuked somebody.
Exactly. Thanks for the call,
and these
man.
Are the good Christians.
I'm going to go, man. Good call.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. All right. And I'm not going to even address the good Christian aspect of these individuals. You have a group that basically voted on an individual predicated upon the idea that he is a man of conviction. Yet when his polls started going down over this past couple of weeks, right before Christmas, when the polls were showing no signs of going up, he reneged on his stance of being just in abject opposition to pulling out troops. And he started talking about drawing down troops in Iraq. Now, this was after attacks. This was after the deaths of U.S. soldiers. So what caused this individual of conviction to make these assertions? Was it the polls? And if it was the polls, how strong are his convictions? Going back to the phone lines, how are you today, Liz?
Hi, good morning.
How are you, ma'am?
Hi, Keith. I don't know how... Is this Keith?
It is indeed.
I don't know how much... I haven't listened to the program in a while, but I don't know how much has been discussed on the Voters' Rights Act of 1964.
We haven't talked about it much this morning.
You haven't talked about it at all.
Nope.
And I just tuned in, and I was just concerned about throwing that out and getting some reaction from the listeners, because...
In what regard? Hello?
Yeah.
In what regard?
And what's being done? Are people concerned? Are people aware of it? And this will also, if this is not passed by at least 36 states, then it will jeopardize the voters' rights for African Americans.
Can you turn your radio down?
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So I just wanted to get some reaction from that, some feedback.
Okay. As far as it goes, I don't think it'll have a problem passing. I think that it's definitely something that we need to keep in the fore. We need to keep it in sight. But I don't think it'll be a problem passing it. And honestly speaking, I think that given the nature of the society today, it's something that we can probably even I won't say do away with, but definitely reword or some type of way make it a permanent part of the Constitution to where it's not something that has to be voted on again. Because there is the danger, even though it's a slight one, there is the danger that it might not pass. And then where are we? Thanks for your call. This is Keith Gray on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. I'm sitting in for Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call, and I will be right back after this traffic and commercial break.
That's why, man, I be telling you all the time, man, you know, love, that word love is a very serious thing. And if you don't watch out, I tell you that. Because a lot of people out here, they say, I love my car, or I love my chain, or I'm just in love with that girl over there. So for all the people out there that fall in love with material items, we're going to bump the beat a little something like this. I'm in junior high with a B-plus grade. At the end of the day, I don't hit the arcade. I walk from school to my mom's apartment. I got to tell the suckers every day, don't start it. Just where I'm at if you're smart.
This is your wake-up call, Global News Update. Dateline, Mexico City. Mexican President Vicente Fox has hired a well-known Republican strategy planner to help change American opinion on illegal immigration policies. Fox has enlisted the help of Rob Allen to help gain sympathy from the general American public for immigrants who are crossing the border illegally. A recent piece of legislation passed by the House of Representatives will pay for 700 miles of new border fencing and make illegal entry a felony. Fox denounced that law as shameful, stupid, and underhanded. The Senate takes up that measure in February, but it does not have the guest worker provisions in it that President Bush called for 2 years ago. Rob Allen, by the way, is the man who helped Bush beat Governor Ann Richards for the State House in Texas. The term of President Fox ends this year, and he wants to be seen as the Mexican leader who gained freer access to the United States. And Dateline London. Some former high-ranking NATO officials say the accidental attack on the Chinese embassy in Yugoslavia back in 1999 was, in fact, no accident. A publication called Defense and Foreign Affairs says the attack happened because faulty intelligence had placed then-Serbian leader Slobodan Milosevic in the embassy, and he was the real target of that strike. The Clinton administration had taken the position that the attack was an accident because of faulty maps. The officials say the U.S. government was convinced that the Chinese embassy was being used as a rebroadcast facility for the Yugoslav army, and it was also thought to be monitoring NATO's cruise missile attacks on Belgrade at the same time. This is your wake-up call Global News Update.
Here in this lush tropical rainforest, moisture is what keeps everything healthy and beautiful. Your lips need moisture to be healthy and beautiful, too. ChapStick Lip Moisturizer forms a light protective barrier to keep your lips' moisture in balance. So with every use, your lips look and feel healthier. ChapStick Lip Moisturizer. Keep your lips ChapStick healthy. Use as directed.
Your show is the best show on here, but I love it when you do what you do. I love it.
No more pissing these problems off to my children. No more passing them off on other generations. We deal with the problem today, right now.
I love it.
And that's why I applaud our soldiers, because they're doing the job today, so they don't push it off onto my kids tomorrow. And that's why they deserve a big pat on the back.
I love it.
Today's Solutions with Dave Linehan, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU.
All right. Yes. Yes. Guys are great.
Let her up.
So, which one's yours?
The one at bat.
Right. Oh, that's okay, Chris.
Only my kid could strike out and see ball.
Oh, good, Chris.
Looks like he's having some trouble running. Oh, he's wandering way off the baseline. It's like he can't see.
Oh, my gosh, his helmet is too big.
It's as big as a bucket.
You know, I must have gotten him an adult one. What was I thinking?
You're out!
Oh.
When safety equipment doesn't fit, it's game over. That goes for your kids, too. If they're too big for a car seat, that doesn't mean they're the right size for an adult safety belt. If they're under 4'9", they need a booster seat. It raises them up so the safety belt fits properly. And the right fit makes all the difference to their future. To learn more, visit www.boosterseat.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
This is Jim Curran, Current Events. We're on every Monday nights now from 8 to 10 p.m. On Current Events, we let both sides of an issue be heard. That way we can learn from each other. That's Monday nights, 8 to 10 p.m., Jim Curran, Current Events, right here on WGNU.
Welcome back, WGNU listeners. This is Keith Gray on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, sitting in for Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call. The numbers to dial are 314-454-0400 is the local number. The long-distance number is 1-877-920-9468 or 1-877-920-WGNU. You can also get me on the Internet at www.wgnu.net. Let's go back to the phone lines. How are you today, Chuck?
Just fine, Keith. Happy New Year to you.
And to you, sir.
I'm enjoying your show.
Well, thank you.
First, I think this is the second time I've heard you.
Okay.
I was unaware that you came on at 1. I'll be looking, listening in for you.
Yeah, I'm one,
now.
To, 1 to 2 daily.
Listen, the reason why I called, several callers back, a lady called in about surveillance cameras on the north side.
Yes. Well, she mentioned something about either placing them in individuals' hands or place. Yeah, she's mentioned specifically giving them to individuals.
Individuals.
Right, right.
Well, I think that's misinformation.
Okay.
There is some thing going on where a lot of residents on the north side has asked for surveillance cameras, not to monitor the misbehavior of the police,
mm-hmm.
but we have streets over here on the north side.
Okay.
That drivers seem to think is Gateway International.
Okay.
So these surveillance cameras would be mounted at, like on top of a red light, and when a vehicle passes within that range, a sensor kicks on. If they run through that red light, the camera takes a picture of the plate.
Oh, okay.
And those drivers send a ticket. That's basically, and I've been in on it for quite a number of months now.
Okay, so
that's it. So they're not going to be surveilling people.
Okay, now, does that have anything to do with the AFL-CIO?
No.
Okay, well, that's what the caller was referencing,
no,
and I don't know if that's
absolutely.
The same.
This is ward residents, local people here that are interested in making the streets safe for the, you know, there's a high number of children in the streets over here on the north side.
Sure.
And they're just racing up and down here like it's hard to go north.
Okay. Well,
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Right. Okay. Bye.
Okay. And maybe that is what the caller was referring to, and I'm not certain. So I can't really address that. The caller referenced that the AFL-CIO was going to purchase and place in the hands of Northside residents cameras to monitor police activity and specifically police brutality. So that doesn't sound like, well, it's not the same thing that the caller just talked about, but I don't know if there's a separate program or what the deal is with that. Again, let's go back to the phone lines. How you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing good, Keith. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, and the caller before somehow hit on it about law enforcement
mm-hmm.
and officers well, in the St. Louis and Illinois metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm.
My question is how can officers get more in contact with the people as far as not on a law enforcement issue, but on just social issues?
I love that.
Because, I mean, there isn't really too many professions that's, you know, really more, you know, respected as far as, I mean, you know, a person wants to do good, you know.
I agree. And I think that the potential for the police to do good far outweighs the potential for them to be wrong and to do bad. I think that they have probably, if not the most, one of the most intimate relationships, or they should have one of the most intimate relationships with the community that exists. I mean, they go into people's homes at the most diverse times, at the most opportune times, and at the worst of times. So I think I love the idea, and I always harken back to when I was a kid, they used to have Officer Friendly coming into the schools to talk to kids, and that for us, that actually fostered a relationship for us and the police, because they would send officers from the neighborhood to come in as officer friendly. And we would see them out, you know, patrolling and everything. And we would say, hey, that's officer friendly. And they would talk to us as kids. But that doesn't exist anymore. Also, there are communities, like the caller who just called in. There are communities, organizations and community meetings, block unit meetings, where these officers could go in. And as a matter of fact, there's one that comes to my block unit meeting. And he's kind of like our officer. He comes in and he basically addresses the issues that go on in the community, and he talks to us about how the community, how the police police department is dealing with the interests of our community and how they are being addressed, and that alleviates a lot of the alienation that we feel from the police department.
I remember those things too. That's a good point. Yeah.
And I don't see why they're not around anymore. I don't understand why you would remove something that was working, or at least had the appearance of working, from your communities, and then replace that with what is now hostility.
Good point.
Thanks for the call, man.
All right.
All right. Let's see if I can get to Mildred. How are you, ma'am?
Fine, thank you. How are you, Keith?
I'm great, ma'am.
Keith, whoever leaked that surveillance stuff is a person we ought to admire.
Yes, ma'am.
Forget looking to find out who he is. Concentrate on that White House up there.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, and that's what we all need to focus on, because what they're trying to do is divert our attention again.
Okay, Bush, I'm sorry. Keith?
Yes, ma'am.
This is a lawless administration.
Yes, ma'am.
And every time you look around, they're trying to caution the American people about the rule of law, and they are the most lawless people. They're right over, hung over from the Nixon administration. They're all in the Bush administration.
Yes,
they're furthering what the Nixon administration started, and they're trying to tell us how to behave, and they're taking the Supreme Court and trying to turn it to a court that will do nothing but help Bush and serve Bush.
And do
that's
that.
Going on. The Supreme Court is not the law of the land,
no,
like some people think. The U.S. Constitution is the law of the land.
Yes, ma'am.
And George Bush ought to be impeached according to Article 2, Section 4. Read it for yourselves. And Cheney will not be able to succeed him, so don't think it.
All right, Mildred.
Thanks
for the call. All right, this has been Keith Gray on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. We've been sitting in for Liz Brown on the morning wake-up call. I will be back tomorrow from 1 to 2 p.m., and thank you, and have a great day.
GNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Michael Barr. A Tournament of Roses parade streak has ended. For 51 years, it hasn't rained on the parade in Pasadena. Spectators in rain ponchos are lined along the route as the parade is just beginning in rain. The rain is part of a system that has flooded parts of California. ABC's Og Stone is in Sonoma County.
The rain is easing up a bit. The